It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is at home in the Lower Macungie. Richard Campbell is in Romania. I'm in Cranston, Rhode Island at Mom's house. We're going to talk about Windows 11. Paul starts the show off with a rant, believe it or not. He says, guys, focus. He also talks about his spidey sense tingling about a small announcement that Microsoft made that he thinks might mean something larger is on the way. He's also saying goodbye to the guy who designed the Arc mouse. We'll talk about AI, lots about AI, and Xbox. And Richard has an old friend with a new look. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Episode 877, recorded Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. The Tiger in the Grass. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. There's a lot of AI news these days. Of course, we are all over the world once again. The only person who's at home right now is Paul Thurrott in beautiful Lower Macungie,
Pennsylvania. Yeah, and I'm overdue to move anyway, so maybe I'll mix that up soon.
It's time to get out of there, you know?
Yep. It's been a few months.
Every few months. It's a good thing to pack everything you have up and
keep the cats on their toes.
Yeah. Scares the
hell out of
you.
You
guys calm down? Yeah? All right, believe
it. Guess who's in Romania? And in, what is it? Ishi?
Yash.
Yash.
Just like it's spelled. Yash.
Just like it's
with two eyes. Yash.
Okay. Wow.
Are you in an industrial hospital of some kind? What is that?
I think this is the heater, the radiator behind me.
Nice.
So, well, yeah, it's a little
I like that they move past tiles.
It's something. Yeah, remember the old tile wood stoves?
I don't have a fireplace.
Yeah.
You know, something.
It's kind of Eastern European looking. So
yeah,
that's
no,
good.
It feels very Eastern European.
It has.
And are you there for a conference?
Here for a conference, yeah.
Nice. What a guess.
Yeah.
I am at my mom's house where we're having a conference over at the Assisted Living Center.
Nice.
Mm-hmm, and mom, I'm having
how's that conference going, Leo?
That's so much fun. I'm having lunch with my mom, and she says in a sotto voce, whisper loud enough to be heard across the entire dining room.
Yes.
See that guy over there? He's rich.
I love it. But,
yeah. He had three wives.
Yeah, it's like he had cancer. Thank you. Everyone
knows
now.
I think they're all deaf enough that nobody really, it's really hysterical. It's almost comedic. It's wild.
Yep.
But it's fun to, you know, it's nice to see mom. She's doing great. She's in a memory care ward where nobody remembers anything. So she will forget that I was there this morning. But
mm-hmm. Sorry.
You know what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm very excited. Here in beautiful Rhode Island, the Dune Brothers Quahog Shack has opened up, and I'm going to be picking up clam cakes and lobster rolls.
I recommend not calling it the Quahog Shop when you go there, but I suspect
Quahog's
it's
the Rhode Island name for clams.
No, I know that. It's Quahog.
Quahog. Well, Quahog is a place. Quahog is the clam, I think.
Mm. You know, I'll ask my wife, who grew up with 2 feet in the water, whether that's the case or not.
You're a native. You're a native, but you know, I grew up here too. I'm not completely without my Rhode Island savvy, but we always call them Quahogs. Anyway, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I'll ask the guy.
You guys grew up within 30 seconds of each other. I mean,
I know
that's interesting.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
That's probably where the straight line is.
I'm here in Cranston. Cranston. Anyway, that's irrelevant because we're not here to talk about our locations. Our physical locations are irrelevant. We are here.
Right.
We are gathered together to talk about Windows, AI, and the future. Oh, that was the past. That was last week. This week,
nice.
Windows, AI,
and the future.
In the future. Let's start with Windows 11.
It's almost like there's a theme. if I could just go off on a, I guess this could be a short one, but a little rant.
Already? We just got here.
I know. This upset me so much that I wrote a scathing 2,000 word article, like editorial, and then shelved it, looked at it the next morning and said, yeah, I can't put this out there. And then wrote a better, like a slightly friendlier one. But The long story short is that, as you guys know all too well, you know, I've spent years and arguably decades, if you take into account all of the versions of Windows, you know, complaining about the things that are wrong with this platform. And Windows 11 is what I would call a target-rich environment for these kinds of complaints. Like, it's escalated. And I think I talked about this last week. I had recently kind of formalized these complaints into a list, which I organized by severity level, right? And when I look at Windows 11 today, to me, the biggest issues are basically come down to forced usage / it not paying attention to my choices. The forced usage of Microsoft Edge when you choose a different default browser. The things that Edge does horrible, even when you do choose it as the default browser. And then the forced usage of Microsoft OneDrive, which enables folder backup behind your back after you say no to it. In fact, right before this show, I rebooted the computer. And the screen I see is that thing that pops up that says, hey, do you want to finish set up your computer? You could turn on folder backup, you know. And I take a picture of it every time. I've got like, I don't know, 1,000 photos of the screen now. And there's no click here to never be asked this question again, right? And they don't care what you say. They're just going to turn it on.
So they really want you to do it.
I wouldn't call these pet peeves. These are way beyond pet peeves. And then there's this whole other world of other annoyances and blah, 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 nonsense, whatever. So last Friday after the show, which was on Wednesday, obviously, you know, kind of an innocuous little Windows Insider build, something, something, something. And not really much going on there, but Microsoft is adding a recommended app icon to the start menu in Windows 11. And it's going to appear first in Canary and Dev, and then it will make its way to Stable or the general availability channel, I'm sure, any second now, right? And for some reason, this is what everyone chose to be outraged over. So I saw this via email. I saw it in the comments on my site, saw it on Twitter and other social networks. People like literally losing their minds over this. Like, this is the line in the sand for people. Mm. And all I have to say to those people is you need to focus because, A, this feature has been in Windows 10 since Windows 10 was a thing. It's the right at the top of the start menu.
You talk about it all the time.
It's not new. It's new to Windows 11. In fact, it's kind of a regression if you want to look at it that way, right? Because the start menu was all new and they couldn't do everything. You can turn it off. In fact, the option to turn it off is already in Windows 11. So if you don't see this feature today and you've already turned off this feature, this option, you probably will never see it. And that falls into below low severity for me. It's an annoyance, but it's not like an endemic.
It's a fixable annoyance.
Can I ask a question though? Because people did act like this is all brand new.
Yep.
In the past, was it only recommendations for Microsoft software, and now it's recommendations or ads, frankly, for third party programs? Is that the difference?
I don't think that's the difference. I think the difference is that we forgot this was a thing because we've been using Windows 11.
We just got used to it.
You know, Windows 11 start menu is dramatically different. And when I a couple weeks ago went back and reinstalled Windows 10 on a 8th gen Intel system, I took one look at the start menu and said, yeah, this has got to stop. And I guess got rid of all the live tile stuff and I actually configured it so that I don't see this stuff anymore. But you will see newly installed apps and then recommended apps at the top of that all app list in Windows 10 by default. That's the default setting.
And I remember you teaching us how to turn that off.
Yep. I mean, look, for many years now, I have been writing about what I think I used to call the kind of post-install configuration tasks. Right. You know, you just install Windows.
Decrapifying, whatever. Others call it.
And it's still, you know, it's a big part of the Windows 11 field guide. But this one, this is not, look, you don't need a third-party utility. You don't have to know any secrets. You know, it's right in the UI. You can turn it off. Simple. Not a big deal. But yet, like I said, I still get pushback from my problems with Edge and OneDrive, which to me are endemic, huge insertification problems. And for some reason, this has set people off. So I have to say is you got a mountain molehill.
Pick your battles.
You got to be able to see which is which. I'm really confused.
There's been sort of an attack on the reviewer thing lately too. Marques Brownlee in his review on the Humane thing, which, I mean, there's nothing new in the review. It was obvious, but there was a big lashback on him because he's so popular.
Because he was honest about a product he reviewed, which is what we all do and should
do. Which is why he has a massive number of followers, because he says it like it is.
So here are the two things that I find outrageous about that incident. One is that Microsoft, Apple, I don't know Google, but Microsoft and Apple have shifted from focusing their PR efforts on what I would call actual journalists and reviewers and targeting friendly bloggers and YouTube channel type people, right? Influencers. They are looking for positive feedback, not feedback. They don't want any feedback. They want positive press, so to speak, that just channels what they're already saying, right? They're not interested in people like me who just tell the truth, good, bad, or indifferent, you know? But the most outrageous thing I saw about this came from Strachery. Ben Strachery, is that the guy's name?
Strachery, Ben Thompson. Strachery.
He said, we need more people like this. We should all be like this. And I'm like, excuse me. When this guy was still in his diapers, I was this. These people do exist. And this is the role that I have played in the Microsoft ecosystem my entire life. It makes me sad. but the fact that this guy, who was very popular, like you said, and exists in that kind of influencer space. Sorry,
Ben Thompson's not. He's an analyst. And
Marquez.
Oh, you're talking Marquez.
Fact that he is out in the world doing that is important, and we need more of that. We need less of the, you know, people like they said get a free sample of Revlon and they start talking about how beautiful it is and like all that kind of nonsense we see online, especially on YouTube. So, I don't want to get too deep into this, but as an editorial kind of thing, I used to have a standalone email newsletter for news that was called WinInfo, and the tagline was news and information ... no fluff. And sometimes people would write me an email or whatever, and they say, hey, how come you didn't cover this topic, whatever it might be? And I said, because it's not important, you know, but editorial by omission is too subtle for people. So I think you can't just, you know, you have to be explicit about those things that are bad, you know, just so you can, you know, people understand where you stand on things. Anyway, this is a little thing. It's a single icon in the start menu that you can easily remove, caused a level of uproar and what I can think of as like faux outrage that is incommensurate with what this is. And it makes me sad, because all I try to do literally at a professional sense is try to highlight the things that are really problems and then try to solve those problems. Mm-hmm. And this thing is already solved. It's solved. It's not a problem. It's stupid. It's typical Microsoft. It's all kinds of things. It's not even worth discussing other than the fact that what happened. So anyway, I hope that wasn't too long. I'm sorry. I didn't want to make it too much about that.
How do you feel about the humane AI pin, though?
Glad you asked.
That's what I really would like to know.
This epic piece of crap. No. what it reminds... Look, we are looking for the thing that will replace the smartphone, right? This is what Microsoft used to call the next wave. They thought they missed it. Well, they did. They missed it with the smartphone. So they're like, we're going to be on the next wave. And for a little while, it was like personal digital assistants. Maybe that will be the next wave, you know? Now we're like, okay, AI is going to be the next wave, right? Whatever it is, but what's the thing? Where's the platform? Where does it go? How does this thing change? You know, what's the thing that does to the iPhone and to smartphones what the iPhone and smartphones did to Windows and the PC, right? What's the next step? And I don't have an answer. None of us do. We might have thoughts. We can look at the stupid pen and be like, you know what? I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that. It's not going to be that. Another way to do the thing I can already do with the device that I carry around with me all the time. No. I mean, I think in some distant future, there'll be versions of things that are improvements over what we have now. It could be a future version of a watch as an interim step, but it's more likely going to eventually be things that are kind of embedded in our bodies, whether they're glasses and then contact lens and then literal transplants or little sensors that you insert into your wrist or wherever, to give you that health feedback stuff that you use now with a watch or tracker. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Is it going to be a pin that looks like a hello, my name is Bob thing? No, probably not. You know, probably not. So that's my take on that. I've never seen it. I don't care about it. I hope to never talk about it again.
Well, I think the good news is you probably won't.
Right.
The real question is how they raised $270 million for
it. Oh, I can tell you why.
Yeah.
Two letters, A and I. You know, in the same way that, you know, the internet and then Linux and then different things at different points in time kind of resulted in these waves of investment and VCs
and really
whatever.
There's a really good article by Steven Sandovsky, not Sanovsky. about this and it really does kind of explain the whole reason humane when they started, by the way, this they started doing this in 2017.
Part is this of the an reason, AI hype cycle issue, or does it more than that?
It wasn't AI initially so much, it was a phone replacement.
And the whole
thing was the laser projector. Sandovsky says that they got all the money because, you know, it's a couple, a husband and wife that are doing it. And the husband used to work at Apple. And
I was going to say former
Apple employee.
Yep. That raises visibility on any project, right? You're like, yes. Oh, interesting. He might have some ideas about what the next thing might be, you know?
And what Sandovsky says, well, the article's called Why You Can't Build Apple with Venture Capital.
Nice.
And it's really, it's actually a perfect synopsis of what happened here. They pivoted AI.
It sounds like it's a perfect storm of wanting to believe. And
yeah, and actually, you maybe remember there was a bracelet that you would wear that would project a screen on your arm, on your forearm, that was equally terrible. It was called the Secret. C-I-C-R-E-T.
I don't remember that, but I think about glasses slash contact slash, my scenario is always, it could be anywhere, but I'm sitting in an airplane. I didn't bring a computer.
Right.
But in my eyes on the thing in front of me, I can see the screen. And on that tray table, I have a keyboard and I'm computing because it comes with me. And that's the, you know, that's the, this future I sort of see, but you know, you have to take interim steps to get to that. So
I'm excited. And I think it's reasonable for those of us in the business to look at all these things. There it is. That's the article. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's unreasonable for Marquez to warn his vast audience. Unreasonable.
It's beyond reasonable. It is his responsibility. Yeah.
At the same time, there are those of us, for instance, the Vision Pro, which was even more expensive than the Human AI pen. And I didn't tell people not to buy it, but it's pretty clear to me that that is a dead end product in a category we already have seen and has failed. So, I think we want to buy those and try those. We do. We don't want our audience to. I just bought a pair of, I'm sure they're going to be terrible, glasses. They're from a company called Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So look more like this. And
yeah, but you know what?
They're AR, they're augmented reality projected on the lenses. It's a very interesting category. The folks at Rewind AI, which we've been talking about for some time, Paris Martineau knows the principals there. She ran into him in a bar a few months ago. Just announced the thing called Limitless. I don't know if you've seen this, which is I think this is the closest thing. It's a pin, a brooch, or you can hang it around your neck, but it's not projecting anything. It doesn't have a screen. It's not a phone replacement, which is what Humane was pitching. It's a recording device that records all the time, sends it to AI for synopsis and transcription, and then you can query the AI. They actually have there it is. They have an app.
Look,
we've
somehow gone off on some deep AI thing here in the middle of us.
Well, no, the only reason I mentioned this, these are all new products that are worth looking at because they're the first steps in a new category.
The thing that's tough about replacing a phone is that it's such a multi-purpose device, just like the PC is and was. Right? The PC has kind of consolidated down to some core tasks related to productivity for the most part, gaming, but it's not everything anymore, right? I did see a story back at CES about a single-purpose device that was AI that instead of a pair of glasses or something like that, it was a thing you could put over, like maybe put on one side, I think it was. And what it would do is live translate and live caption everything that was happening around you.
Yeah.
And the reason there are these little germs of ideas that I think make sense. My son is deaf. When he was a child, they were just starting to bring, like, what do you call this? Like individual use captioning solutions to theaters, like movie theaters. Mm. So you could sit there with this thing on a pole that had like a see-through plastic screen, and it would project captions to that. So he could sit, it would kind of sit in front of him. He could watch the movie through and around it, and the captions would appear as if on the screen, but only for him. And that was nice for the day. Now you can actually see captions in some theaters and they do that kind of thing. But the notion that you could wear like a little thing, you know, we're bringing this thing down to something that's manageable and personable, fits in your pocket, whatever. It's an interesting idea. But again, like because the phone is so universal, you have to look at everything through the lens of a phone. And a lot of these things, like the pen, you know, it's like, well, does this do anything that the phone doesn't already do? And does everything the phone does? And the answer is
Yet, but you could probably do the same thing with your Apple Watch.
Yes.
Brilliant glasses are exactly what you just described for your son, except you're looking through prescription lenses that have an OLED layer that are displaying.
Yeah, no, it's
so it's a very interesting idea, I think. But it needs a phone, I'm sure.
Right. This is not in the notes, but I wrote an article about, maybe it isn't in the notes. I wrote that we might talk about this later, this notion of embrace and extend. And yeah, no, we are going to talk about it. I'm sorry. But one of the interesting things about that is that that phrase was kind of vilified on the outside of Microsoft. But internally, it wasn't really seen as this horrible, antagonistic monster, you know, strategy. It was just like a recognition that that's how all software and hardware was at the time. You built on what came before. Everyone does this. This is the Apple.
Build on the shoulder of giants. Right?
Yep. I mean, Netscape, the company that brought this to light publicly, was doing the same thing to Mosaic. You know, I mean, it was like we all build on what came before. That is the point of our industry. And so some of these things will be, like we talk about like Arc Browser, we talk about Windows Phone as an example of something where they tried but failed. It's important to try these things, and some will succeed and some won't. Not all ideas are good, but you know, you can't move forward without taking some risks and, you know, whatever. So I don't know. I agree with you. I guess is all I'm saying.
That's a very wordy way. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, things are happening fast, and we're going to be,
problem with AI.
Seeing this stuff in the next couple of years, actually come to fruition.
We have always, the three of us and everyone watching and listening, have always existed in this industry where speed is the key. Mm-hmm. We talked about internet speed in the 1990s, which looks like grandma in the slow lane today. We talked about how regulation and laws can't keep up with the speed at which technology evolves. Sure.
100 million users in a year. 100 million
users. But now it's exponentially faster than it was. Yeah. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago. It makes the complaints about the speed of technology in the 90s look quaint. Mm-hmm. For people like us who are used to it, it still feels too fast.
It's accelerating. It isn't the same speed. It's getting faster and faster.
It's interesting because, because this is the past week. In the notes, you will see multiple examples of these things that we just talked about. It is a literal theme of everything we do now. It's crazy. So that's the world we live in.
Which I think is exciting.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting and scary, isn't it?
It's right? Scary. And what it's scary for is incumbents. And really the battle at this point is going to be who disrupts. Do the big companies get to do this?
Yep.
Because no one can do it at the scale they can. Jason Snell wrote a good article about that.
Yeah. This is not like in the notes in any way, shape or form, but I think it's very interesting that, you know, Microsoft was disrupted by this stuff, your cloud, we'll call it web and mobile, I guess. Yeah. But then found a second life in cloud, which is astonishing. A huge business case study. It's awesome. Apple went through its own thing, almost went out of business. Steve Jobs came back, went off in a completely different direction and became the biggest company in the world. And, you know, these companies that were the disruptors have in some cases been disrupted. And of course, now everyone's like, what's it going to be? Like, when does Apple get disrupted? When does Google Search get disrupted? And
decision to go to Google for AI services is, you know, smart. They could sit down and try and build their own. And there may have been a time when a Jobs would have done that.
Yep.
It's like, why? There's a half a dozen of them already. They're really expensive. The chances of yours being better are low. And you own a phenomenally valuable customer base.
Right.
Have a bidding war. You know, they're not going to pay Google for AI services. Google's going to pay them.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. It's smart. It is pragmatic. It's smart. Is it disruptive? Right. I mean, is it enough to fend off disruption from the outside? Or is some small company like OpenAI or something like that going to come up and, you know, stab them in that little part of the Achilles that's, you know, not protected because that's where they held the guy into the water or whatever. Right. I mean, it's got, that's how that stuff tends to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
Well, anyway, we live in interesting times.
And we sure do with all of the caveats and asterisks that you attach to that statement. Exactly.
And this is one of the reasons, you know, I like what we do because we get to, we have front row seats.
Yeah. Right. And by the way, we also have that responsibility and part of it is to try. We're not always going to be right. Right. But look at all the stuff that's out there, AI or otherwise, and say, this is important. This is not, you know, this is silly and superfluous. This, you know, and it's pretty clear where this pin thing ended up in the dustbin of history there. And we'll, it will make lists in the future. And people are like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. You know,
yeah. It's always a battle of, is this an iPhone or is it a Newton?
Yeah, you know, there you go. Like, that's a good way to put it.
But the point is, though, that the iPhone wouldn't exist if the Newton hadn't existed.
True.
I wouldn't disagree. And that's part of it. Like, they're very much going for the Star Trek, you know, badge on the chest kind of effect. Right. So there's a callback to science fiction. Yep. There's a case for the form factor. The tech may not be ready and the customer may not be ready.
But we may well end up with something like that.
Yeah. But I can tell you who's not going to make it. Those guys.
Maine. a lot of the upset, by the way, was from humane adjacent people like investors who saw $270 million go up in puff of smoke.
I hope this informs future investments in AI and potential iPhone replacements. And it will, right? And maybe this will help slow this down a little bit, make it a little more manageable. I am nostalgic for the days when Microsoft 365 used to be hard to cover because they added too many features every month. I wish it was like that. Those are the good old days now. They really are. And it was like 10 seconds ago. It wasn't like 20 years ago. This is, you know, not that long ago.
Right. I am paying close attention to what's getting funded and what isn't. Like, is there rationality entering that investor class around this, or are they just still thinking it's all a land grab as much as you can grab?
Well, that's the interesting thing about the Sendovsky article is he really talks about why there is so much investor money in this. You know, it's really play money for them.
Yeah. The issue is there's too much money.
You want to back a company that's going to experience rocket growth, which is something that can't really happen with Microsoft and Apple and Google, right?
Yeah.
The very nature of them being incumbents and being humongous means that they will do what they do. Like, you know, people can kind of debate the U.S. antitrust case against Apple. But the reality is when you have a monopoly or market dominance, whatever you call it, semantically, whatever you want to call it, you circle the wagons and you protect it. Mm-hmm. And that's not where innovation comes from.
And you live in innovator's dilemma because you've circled the wagons.
So it is a natural byproduct of size. This is what happens.
This is exactly the conversation we had yesterday on Mac Break Weekly, whether Apple could play in this space. And I think it's the same. Can Microsoft? Microsoft's really positioned itself surprisingly well. You know, those brilliant glasses I was talking about?
Right.
They use OpenAI, right?
So we're going to, there's so much that ties into this in the show. Where these companies do or do not play in this world is very interesting because to enthusiasts, we think about it as being all front end UI devices, software, whatever it is. But really the thing that these giant companies can bring to bear is really more back end in nature. And Amazon, we're going to talk about this very explicitly, is like, look, we're basically just doing the back end. This is what we're doing. And that it's a smart move because developers build on AWS. It's very familiar. It's very trusted. It works great. And there's signs that they're developing a back-end infrastructure that will keep that momentum going, just in the same way that Microsoft is kind of extending their own cloud thing with AI. In addition to, you know, they're doing I don't think anyone looks at like Copilot and Windows 10, 11 and says, that's the future. But the stuff that they're doing in the back with Copilot and Azure services based on AI and so forth, this will keep these guys going for decades.
When there's a gold rush, sell picks and blue jeans, and you're going to do very well.
Right? Yes. <Yeah.
laughs> You may That's not right. get the gold, but you're going to sell a lot to miners.
But yep. I'm concerned for AWS going to the back end because they are late to building a model. You know, if they're really going to play in that back end game where they're going to have their own model, certainly they have the cloud for it.
But I think they're doing a parallel path to that, which is they are going to be multi-model. And we'll basically just, you know, look, you trust us. Here's the infrastructure. We work with everything. Pick the LLM or LLMs that make the most sense for your solution. This is going to be the best place to do that stuff. You know, that's their kind of message right now. And I honestly, yeah, okay. I mean, I think it, you know, we'll see. But
we're in that period of time, and it's the best time, I think, when
this is the implementation time.
And no one knows. No one has any idea what's going to happen. So everybody's throwing stuff at the wall. Everybody's scrambling as fast as they can. And there's going to be lots of innovation. Well, I'm excited because we've been going through the doldrums in the last 10 years. The iPhone kind of killed everything. And everything looks like an iPhone.
You were gone for a couple of weeks down in Mexico. And Micah did the show for those 2 weeks. And one of the things he brought up that I thought was kind of fascinating was me complaining about the chaotic, unpredictable nature of Windows updates. Every 2 seconds, something new's happening. And he said, I got to tell you, from my perspective as an Apple guy, I actually think this is kind of cool because nothing happens with Apple. Like they have the 1 year release and then nothing. And I said, well, your market has adapted to focus almost exclusively on rumors for the other 12 months or whatever. And that's the nature of that world. So is the chaotic, unpredictable nature of Windows updates in some way exciting in the same way that what we're describing here is somewhat exciting? Yes, but it's also scary. It's like falling off a cliff in a car. We don't all want it, but I'll tell you, your heart's going to race for those 2 seconds. And, is that good? It's exciting. I think we can agree it's exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay.
That was a lot of talk for like one icon in the star menu.
So Microsoft is putting ads in the star menu. Unbelievable.
Oh my God. So, and this is what set you guys up. Now that we've really put it in perspective, my article fell well short of this. I wasn't really encompassing the whole industry.
Yeah. Let me take a little break and then we'll get back to the matter at hand, Windows 11. I know you have more to say about that. We're doing our Windows Weekly thing as we do every Wednesday, Paul Thurrott and the fabulous peripatetic, I'm going to call you peripatetic Richard Campbell, because he never seems to light in one place for very long. Now in Romania. Yeah. Good to have you both. Good to have all our Club Twit members listening as well. Our show, and all of you, Twit members or not. Our show today brought to you by our friends at ACI Learning. They are the provider of IT Pro, binge-worthy, IT Pro, right? Video on demand, IT and cybersecurity training. With IT Pro, you'll get certification ready with access to their full video library, more than 7,250 hours of training. Wow. Premium training plans also include practice tests. Now, that's really great. I know that from back when I was in school and I took the exams, the practice SATs, and practicing, make sure you're ready before you pay for the exams, before it's for the, for all the marbles. They also have virtual labs, which are great because you don't have to have a PC or Windows server. You could even do this in any HTML5 browser. You could do it on a Chromebook. You could set up a server. You could set up clients. You can learn all this stuff hands-on. It's kind of a miracle. It's really great. And my favorite part I like is when I screw things up, I just close the tab and I'm good to go. IT Pro from ACI Learning makes training fun. All training videos, as you probably know, because we've talked about it all the time, are produced in an engaging talk show format. They were really inspired by what we were doing here at Twit when they founded IT Pro 13 years ago. It's truly, dare I say it, edutaining. You know, the thing that I really focus on is the people teaching these online on-demand courses are experts in the field. That's part one. They got to be experts, actual practicing experts in the field. But they also have a passion for what they're doing, and that's what makes it engaging because they love it. And their passion, their excitement carries on to you and makes you excited about it. That's what I call edutainment. Take your IT or cyber career to the next level with IT Pro at ACI Learning. Be bold and train smart with ACI Learning. Here's how you do it. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. Our offer code TWIT30, use that at checkout. It'll save you 30% on your first month or first year of IT Pro training. And if you have a team, there's no better place to get your team training, and fabulous discounts are available there too. Here's what you do. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. And for individuals, the offer code TWIT30 will save you 30%. Everybody else, huge discounts too. go.acilearning.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. We know we have a lot of listeners who are IT Pro or ACI graduates who are working in the business now, thanks to IT Pro. It's a really nice feeling. It really works. All right. Now, are we done? Are we over with the fact that Microsoft has put ads in the start menu on Windows 11? We're done with that. Yes?
For today.
For now.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Yes, let's. Week ago, Tuesday was Patch Tuesday. Remember, we got Moment 5 for the third or fourth time. And we're waiting for what we think is going to be called 24. Well, no, I'm sorry. What we know will be called 24H2 to kind of land in its first iteration. And nothing is really kind of happening. That icon story that we just beat to death was part of one of the only insider builds that occurred since the last show. There were two others that were both release preview builds, one for Windows 11, one for Windows 10, that kind of are not very exciting. So we didn't even write an article about these on Throt.com, but very little going on, which is actually kind of good news in the scope of my we have too many updates complaints, because that means in the short term, we probably aren't going to get anything crazy and stable, or the general availability channel, as we call it. And good. So that's good. Couple of small things to mention. Those widgets are coming to the lock screen on both systems, right? So we're going to have, not widgets, sorry, we don't use widgets anymore. Oh, are they called widgets? I guess they're called cards, whatever they're called. We're going to get more of those things on the lock screen. We're seeing ARM64 MSI support in group policies, yeah, which is very interesting, right? So
yeah, it speaks to future versions of hardware.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And lots of fixes, many of which are similar or the same, sorry, across Windows 11 and 10. And Windows 10, you know, getting some features. I know that's always
just
a sore
spot. Just like they told us it wouldn't.
Yeah. Yep. the account notifications. So we're getting recommended apps in Windows 11, and you're getting account notifications, which came from Windows 11. That started there. This is one I don't actually see a lot of myself. So that's when you click on that little, it's a little bit different in each system, but there's your user account picture. You click on it, you've got these options to sign out or lock the PC, et cetera. You'll see little pop-ups there. In fact, that's one of the places they can say, hey, you might want to turn on folder backup, because God knows it's UIs are legion. And then for you people in the Linux community who thought this was a strategy, it was just a mistake. They're fixing a race condition that stops a machine in a dual multi-boot configuration between, they didn't say it this way, but it's Linux and Windows, from starting up correctly, which I guess was a little bit of a problem in Windows 10 for a couple of months there.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's a problem. So there you go. This is a similarly small, actually it's a set of stories, but a small story, but I'm going to conflate it into something a little bigger. And I think it's related to AI, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do this in backwards order. Last night, and I mean literally last night, for me, it was, 7:30 at night. We were getting ready to, you know, hunker down and watch a couple hours of TV and call it a day. And this thing popped across my feed. And it was, you know, kind of weirdly worded, but basically the idea was that the Photos app in Windows 11 was going to be integrated with the Microsoft Designer app, which is a web app, which is the front end to their AI image creation stuff. And then, okay, that's interesting. And so I read it, and I reread it, and I reread it again, because I must be missing something. And what they announced in a discrete blog post was that they were going to add a button to the Photos app toolbar that looks like the Designer logo, so that you can open the image you're working on in Photos in Designer, mm-hmm. which is like, so I think there's some stuff going on there that, you know, this would be maybe a good use of the share utility in Windows that nobody uses, you know, whatever. But I was also reminded that there was a similar standalone announcement a week or two ago about how the Photos app was transitioning from being a pure UWP app, which is now deprecated, and moving to the Windows App SDK, which is Microsoft's solution for modernizing both desktop and mobile UWP apps, right, to a kind of a more modern foundation.
And I wonder if this is what addresses your question around the Microsoft Store app getting faster, that they are playing with different migration strategies away from UWP.
Yep.
And I think they're playing with them on their own software. They may not even be publishing the different methods they're doing it with.
I think, yeah. So so for me, nothing has changed. I had made the observation that new apps typically are web apps, mm-hmm. and existing apps are modernized in Windows, that is, inbox apps with the Windows App SDK. They have not said that they're modernizing the Microsoft Store with the Windows App SDK, but they just did something under the hood that, you know, sped this app up dramatically. I never found it particularly slow, but okay, fine. The thing these things all have in common, or one of the things maybe, is that each of these is in some ways related to AI, which I think might be the point. So I am definitely reading between the lines. I might even be inventing a conspiracy theory.
I would argue
theory.
It's an excuse to recompile.
Okay.
I wonder if that's the push, is that, okay, well, we've got these AI things we need to get in. We've been meaning to revise off of UWP anyway. So let's just do it all at once.
Not arguing that that's part of it, but I am wondering why they would announce it. Right. So for example, when Microsoft releases instead of it being part of we're doing this in a Windows Insider blog post about Windows, they actually put out a standalone blog post that says we're speeding up the Microsoft Store app. I'm like, okay, without explaining anything about architectural transitions, right? When they put out a standalone blog post explaining that they are transitioning the Photos app from UWP to the Windows App SDK, I'm like, who benefits from this information? Like, this is a weird thing to tell people. Like when they modernized, it's not a great word, but modernized the File Explorer UI in Windows 11 version 23H2 by moving to the Windows App SDK, they made a big deal. They talked about that, but honestly, you took away a feature. You can't drag and drop to it anymore. So I don't know, maybe don't highlight that. It seems like a weird thing to talk about. So now they've released a standalone blog post saying we're adding a button to one of the apps that's built into Windows 10 and 11. So that when you click on it, it opens a web app that's part of Microsoft 365 and Copilot, free and paid. And why does that warrant an announcement?
Yeah.
So my guess is, we've talked about how all parts of Microsoft far and wide have been dictated to that you are going to embrace AI.
Yep.
Show me the money. And I think, I honestly wonder if these announcements aren't in some, because the Microsoft Store, by the way, has an AI hub, which is a stupid interface on the side. You click and it's like, there's AI apps you can get in the store and none of them are interesting. And maybe they will be someday. So I think the Photos app, which has AI built into it for background blur, background removal, et cetera, now will push in, an image over to the Microsoft Designer app, which is a web app. You can install it as a PWA if you want. This is a little bit like manual orchestration, the thing that we expect AI to do for us Copilot might just do this for us. This might be the, what's that little pin thing we were talking about called the humane pin? The humane pin version of the AI we want in the future, where it's not actually very interesting today. It doesn't seem like an innovation. It isn't, but it might be the first step toward this re-architecture it is the things we were talking about, but I think it's more of a refocusing of like, what can AI do for these apps?
And
in some ways, these blog posts are almost, they almost feel like they're targeted internally. Like, they're we're doing messages. What you asked.
You say, you know, maybe. Because I really think you need to rethink the UI in general with these new AI tools. And they're not there yet. Steve Batiste, kind of mindset.
This is going to come up again. Yes. And that talk, we always reference this, Bill last year, his 10 seconds on stage, one of the best Microsoft talks of all time. Mm-hmm. He talked about those three application structures. And Copilot is the first. It's the AI beside. And then he used, by the way, Designer was one of two examples. The other one was Clipchamp of AI inside.
Inside,
yes. Apps that were designed for this era. Simpler UIs, that did a surprising amount of stuff with less, you know, front end stuff. And I'm a Clipchamp fanatic by this point, and he's right. I mean, it's an incredible thing. When you look at video editing solutions, whether it's Adobe Premiere, the Apple stuff, the DaVinci Resolve, whatever that stuff's called, all these, they're very complicated. They're control dense, command dense. They're very hard to figure out. Mm-hmm. Somehow Clipchamp pulls it together. It's
makes it graceful.
The success of that app has less to do with the fact that it's a web app, although that I think that is notable.
Well,
than it does to do with they figured out some UX that just made this make sense. It's beautiful,
like a web app.
It is a web app, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And I can confirm. Yeah. I did a video with
that
it
just
using
means
Chrome.
It's always up to date.
Yep, but it works in Chrome on a Mac. wait, what? Right. I mean, it's I'm sure I haven't done this yet, but I'm sure it would work on a Chromebook too. So, anywho, this is me trying to play that role I was talking about earlier, where I feel like our responsibility is to look at what's happening and say, not important, important. And then in this case, it's like, huh. And, you know, maybe I'm that guy. I see something moving in the grass. I think it's a tiger and I run away and it's not. Maybe it's nothing. I don't know. All I know is that species survived because of that instinct.
It smells like something.
Yeah.
It does smell like something.
It's raised my radar a little bit.
Yeah. And it's interesting. And the hair on my arm is standing up. Something's going on. My spidey senses are tingling.
That's my take. I think something's going on.
I think you're right.
We'll see. So I think I want to put it out there, and then people can, if they see things they think are like this, let me know. And I'm going to be looking too, and we'll see, And, you know, Build is coming, and it's going to be, we're going to be flooded.
They've already announced a day ahead of Build for AI related hardware. So I guess there's going to be some new machines and things.
Yes.
So we know that's there.
So speaking of which, I have exciting news. Mm-hmm. I got my first, I had my first AI PC experience back in, I guess, December when I tested the Core Ultra based HP, which was it, Spectre X360, I think. MPU, you could get the thing going, you know, Windows Studio Effects, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. But now I've had my first experience with an actual AI PC with a little TM next to it, because I got a computer in for review that has the Copilot key on the keyboard. I got to tell you, game changer.
I think you're being facetious, but okay.
Have I ever?
Oh, no, you're the model of serious journalism.
I hit that Copilot key and my spidey sense started tingling.
First of all, it shoots confetti out of that webcam, which is astonishing.
I think they've got something here.
I don't know where it comes from. It's amazing.
I mean, it beats the heck out of the property key, but okay.
Yes.
From a key that we never used.
When these things happen the same number of times.
Do you leap to your feet and say, to the Bat Cave, Stephanie? To the Therat blog, Stephanie.
I don't know what piece of crap computer you're using now, but we're replacing it.
Everything is changing.
You know, one of my big tips with Windows 11 in particular is that they put this stuff on the taskbar by default that you can just get rid of, right? Even if you use that thing every day, you should get rid of it, right? So the search bar thing is a great example of that. Copilot's a great example of that. Mm-hmm. The task view button is the other big example.
Get rid of a key.
The reason you get rid of it is because it's taking up valuable real estate, and there are keyboard shortcuts that always work, even if you hide the icon. Just use the keyboard shortcut. And Windows Key plus C opens Copilot. You don't need a button on the taskbar, and you certainly do not need a key on the keyboard. But of course, I'm not in Microsoft marketing, so what do I know?
It's just like putting an ad in the start menu. It's a reminder that we've got Copilot in this machine.
It's like
Intel Inside.
Have you pressed the Copilot button lately?
Yeah.
Have you?
The button they replaced is the menu. That menu.
That right-click context menu.
Nobody used that either, right?
The thing is, if you use it once, it made it a better button.
I literally just clicked it on my keyboard here just to see if it actually does. Yeah, it does something. That's fun. I don't.
What is it? The right click? Is it the context?
It's right click. Yeah.
Okay. Nobody uses that.
There's a long legacy of this stuff. Remember the Office keyboard? We still have these weird keyboard shortcuts that launch, like Word, Excel, LinkedIn, et cetera, because they were discrete keys on those keyboards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to be going through a pawn shop or some kind of a flea market 20 years down the road. Someone's going to hold one of these things up. Remember they did this? And everyone's going to be like, no, what is that? Is that a picture of a ham? What am I looking at? Why is that on the keyboard?
It isn't. Nobody's going to know. You look at it. It's not obvious at all.
No, it's not obvious at all. And that itself is rather interesting because the Copilot icon as exists today in Windows 11 has been up, like everything else in AI, has changed, not dramatically, but it's changed quickly because it used to have different color schemes. Remember, it was in, it is still in Edge as well. And it was, they moved the position and, you know, the size and the color and whatever. And putting it on a key tells me, well, we're done. We're not changing it anymore. They might change the color scheme, I guess.
It's not color schemed on the button either. But I mean, one would argue they're doing this because nothing else has worked.
Listen, they have done and will do everything they can to make this work, including just auto launching Copilot when you boot into Windows, right? Yeah. This is coming. This is coming. You were worried about a stupid app recommendation thing. Did I emphasize how dumb that concern was? There's other things happening that are like, you'll use Copilot. Damn right you will.
You're not going to have a choice.
Yeah, it is getting there. So, anyway. I have a hard time moving on because it was such a game changer for me. I just, everything else we're going to talk about today seems like superfluous by comparison. The Walking Cat has leaked the first images, I believe, of a Snapdragon X Elite PC, which, as you would hope, is as thin as can be, suggesting that this thing is probably going to be fanless. It's got that kind of what I would call now classic kind of Lenovo premium PC style. Leo, what is happening with you?
Pay no attention.
What are you doing?
Pay no attention to the man. I'm just fixing the camera. Is it distracting? I'm sorry.
Well, it's confusing. You've gone on a Universal Studios ride, and it's the room. You know, you're crawling on the ceiling, but
I'm just fixing the camera.
Is the camera on the side of the laptop?
Ooh, man. It's a shot.
It's on a tripod, and I'm fixing it.
Yeah, Toto has gotten it. It's been pulled they pulled the sheet aside. And,
it's like one of the Three Stooges when their heads kind of come in from the side.
I had too much headroom, and I'm fixing it.
It's Leo. Leo. Leo.
To see here.
Leo.
just forget it. Just go ahead. Go on with your.
We're fine.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry.
Are you going to get one of these Snapdragon machines, Paul? Is that what you're going to do?
I absolutely am. The only question is which one, right?
Yeah, how much will you spend?
You know what the problem is? Lenovo just today reached out to me about a different laptop. I got another one from a different company. I got one in, the one with the Copilot key on it is a Lenovo laptop. And look, I want to review these things, but I want to move. I want to move forward to this.
You want
to
own one. Yeah.
I want to move past Intel Core Ultra Gen 1 to Snapdragon X Elite or whatever.
ARM me.
I want to get ARM. I'm ready.
Ready to be armed.
So in the meantime, I shouldn't say it that way. I won't do that. I was going to say,
I'm astonished that there isn't a Surface.
That's not fair. I will not do that. I will do my job, but I want to move on. You know, it's tough. Well, you see the future. It's like when Microsoft announced Media Center, which was then called Freestyle at whatever CES, I said to the guy, you've just ruined the year for me. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, everything I use now sucks. You just showed me something awesome that I'm going to have at the end of the year. And now I got to go through the year and not have that thing. You know, you ruined the year.
Yeah.
And that's what this feels like. It's like, I want to get there, you know?
Yeah. They're taking their time. No choice about it.
Yep. So what is it? It's April, right? Yeah. It's April. So, I don't know, maybe in a month or so it's going to happen. I mean, it will happen. Mm-hmm. And then May into June, I think we'll get the initial release.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see what they announce ahead of build.
I very much want to see what Microsoft announces. You know, I want to get, I see the Surface laptop as the, you know, our MacBook Air. I mean, the MacBook Air I have is fantastic. I would like to think and hope, and I want to find out that the Surface laptop, whatever, is similarly good. And I hope it is. And I want it to be. And I'll buy one. I'll buy it with my own money. I don't do that a lot. I'm just saying. No. I do it with phones. I don't do it with laptops.
Yeah.
So I'm ready.
Awesome.
Okay. A couple of unrelated points, but I'll throw them together. The lead designer of the original Surface, Ralph Groening, not to be confused with Matt Groening, the guy from The Simpsons, has retired from Microsoft. And I guess retired, although he's going to have, he says very vaguely, he's going to help friends design things. But he is a long-term designer. He started at Volkswagen, go figure, as a toolmaker.
Wow.
Worked at Frog Design, which is that legendary design company in California that did a lot of work with Apple back in the day. And then ended up at Microsoft. And his first product, his first big success, interestingly, was the Arc Mouse, which I think you could kind of lay flat to travel with it. Pop it open, right?
Had to crank it and it gave you the Arc.
It was, aside from being non-ergonomic, the only issue I have with the Arc Mouse was that the sound you made when you crushed it flat was like when you crack open a lobster's back.
Yeah.
And it always made me like I always felt like I was breaking something, but it remains a great idea. They still sell it. And I will say the Surface, the classic Surface, you know, tablet 2-in-1 form factor, formalized a new PC form factor in a way that hadn't happened since the MacBook Air, frankly. Nice. Right. And Microsoft has been trying desperately to repeat that success. It's hard, if not impossible, to do that. But that thing persists. I think they nailed it with the Surface Pro 3 in particular. And then they've been a while ago now. Yes.
We have Pro 10 now?
We are almost 10 years off from that.
Yeah.
But, you know, 12 years since the original Surface.
And we haven't seen all this ARM stuff. Like, where's the Surface ARM?
That's going to be in May as well. That will be.
You think they'll announce an ARM Surface unit in May?
Yeah, I think that the rumors are, and this sounds right to me, is that there will be an ARM version of the Surface Pro, which they've done before, of course. Originally Surface Pro X, and then Surface Pro 9 came right in both versions.
Yeah.
But to me, the big deal is going to be if and when they, and I think they will, the Surface laptop as well, right? 15-inch Surface laptop with an ARM chip in it. Love it.
Yeah. It'd be amazing.
This will solve the hot bagging problem. I'll tell you that. So I can't wait.
Yeah. You gotta hope.
Yeah. I hope. Yes, that's true. Anyway, Ralph is a super, super sweet, nice guy. I've met him several times. I think the last time I saw him in person was pre-pandemic, Surface Go something, something in New York, but, just a sweetheart of a guy. And, one of the real shining stars over there with him and Stevie Batiche, frankly, they were coworkers and did a lot of that work. You know, Ralph was the guy who came up with the kickstand idea, which is one of those things. Yeah. Say what you will about Surface and tablets and all that stuff, but once you experience a kickstand on a tablet like that, you can't not have one. You know,
now I need this.
Yep. So, you know, that's him.
When did he do the Arc Mouse?
That was pre-Surface. So he came to Microsoft. I don't remember the exact year off the top of my head. I want to say 2006-ish, something like that.
I didn't realize the Arc Mouse was that old. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. And there's been different gens. You know, they did the nubbin version, and then it went Bluetooth, so you don't lose that thing in your bag because there was no place it would magnetically attach to the Arc Mouse. But, you know, also an early example of Microsoft really embracing design in the sense that this thing, from being iconic looking, came in multiple colors and was very attractive. And it was one of those things like people who care, like I need a mouse, but I also want something that speaks to me on a kind of a personal level. It was a good idea in that way. And, you know, well done. I mean, really well done. That little lobster back thing, you might regard that as an early peek at what was going to come later with Surface, right? And the hinges and stuff. I mean,
lobster every time you heard it?
No, I felt bad for the lobster every time I heard it because it's like, did I just break his back? It made me feel bad.
Crushed him again.
And then unrelated, but Microsoft announced this week that they're going to retire the perpetual standalone versions of Office 2016 and 2019 at the same time as Windows 10 in October 2025. Mm. Interesting. Windows 10 by October 2025 will have been in the market for 10 years. So that it kind of hits that traditional old school mainstream support life cycle, right? Good. Office 2016 and 2019, you get the kind of feeling that Microsoft begrudgingly makes these things because customers demand it.
Yep.
And they don't want to move on to Microsoft 365. And they limit them in some ways that I would say mostly today are not that egregious. I mean, you can't interact with Microsoft 365 services, et cetera.
No. No, and all the new features, the planners, the list.
Yeah, they don't get new features. Things. Yeah.
They're not on-prem. They're only in M365.
To some people, though, these are benefits, right? We talk about the chaotic, unpredictable release schedule of Windows. This is the opposite of that. You buy this product, and this is the product, and you use it for X number of years. So when you think about Office 2016, I don't remember exactly when it came out, but I think we can assume it was probably late 2015, right? That's 10 years. October 2025 is 10 years. But Office 2019 came out in 2018 or 2019. That's, what is that, 7 years, something? Yep,
it's not that young.
It's they're retiring two products that are 3 years apart at the same time, which says that they're the newer one is on a shorter support life cycle.
And we've seen this everywhere, right? There's no more 10-year support licenses anymore.
Doing them together is a little weird to me. It really sends a message, and it will fuel the fire of, you know, they're gonna get rid of the standalone version at some point. And then, you know, every couple of years they announce, no, we're doing another one, and we kind of put that toggle off for a little while. But it's Microsoft, right? Honestly, you can't say never, but I don't really see them getting rid of it 100%, but they'll make it so unattractive, you know. There's one version of this. I don't know if this ever came up in the show. I looked at this recently. I don't want Office, right? I just want Word. So can I buy Word? Can I just buy Word?
Not anymore. And,
well, actually, you can. It's really, hard. Yeah, you really can. The thing that's goofy about it is a standalone version of Word by itself, just that one app, is more expensive than the standalone version of the cheapest Office suite, whatever that is, the home and student, whatever it's called. Yep. So for the price of... more than the price of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, I think, and maybe Outlook. I can't remember the exact makeup of that. You could just have Word, and so no one's going to buy that. And that's the point.
You could get Word, but you're going to pay.
You can get Word. Oh, you're going to pay for it. Remember how Adobe Photoshop used to be a really expensive standalone app? Yeah, well, we're doing that with Word now. So that's how I see perpetual Office progressing. I think that's what this is really about. The shortened support lifecycle is part of it. It's... yeah, you can get it. Does it do anything? I don't know. It boots up. There's a UI. I mean, does it? I guess it edits Words. I don't know. We don't even pay attention to it. We're not sure. You know, I mean, you can try it. I don't know.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
Yeah. Let us know.
You let us know.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Tell us if it meets your needs. I don't know.
But same for all the AI features. Nothing coming in standalone. This is all M365. Like, which they are building out the feature sets that you can't really.
Some people are going to love it for that, though. You know, the pushback on Copilot or just AI in general is very real, and it's very broken record reminiscent of the move to the cloud. Right? It's the same,
and the internet
mentality,
and the mobile phone, and the printing press.
We've all done this. I always use this example, but this would have been 2010, 2011. We did the iPhone with the on-screen keyboard. Okay. And then they move it to the iPad. And I'm thinking, no one's going to type on this thing. That's ridiculous. And then one night I'm out in Seattle visiting a friend and we're watching a movie or something. And I look over and his wife is on the little table tapping away at her iPad and she's going to town on this thing. And I'm like, okay, so much for that opinion, Paul. Like, some people just do that stuff. So, you know, in some ways your experience with things also can color, you know, how you view new things, right?
Sure.
I mean, just like any,
well, you know, a time before as well, like you've seen these patterns, so you know where they're going.
That's why I'm doing all 8-track tape for music now. The rest of this, everything else has been just a pointless excuse in getting me to spend my money a different way.
There you go.
Okay. We will have a story about this on Throat.com, but we don't have it up yet as we record the show.
And before you go to AI, I want to take a break. I didn't put a little orange text in there.
Oh, why not? Now I miss it, Leo. Now that it's not there.
I'll bring it back.
I feel like you don't care.
More with Paul and Richard. But first, a word from our sponsor, Collide. KOLIDE. We've talked about Collide before. I'm sure you remember. But did you know that Collide just got acquired by 1Password? This is huge news. both these companies are leading the industry in creating security solutions that put users first. And so it's a partnership made in heaven. For over a year, Collide Device Trust has helped companies with Okta ensure that only known and secure devices can access their data. Still doing that, just now as part of 1Password. So if you have Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, don't turn away. It's now's a great time. This is better than ever. Collide comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks, so it's easy to get up and running. And then you can write your own custom checks, so it's easy to customize it to your exact needs for just about anything you could think of. Plus, and I love this, you can use Collide on devices without using MDM, like your Linux fleet or your contractor devices or every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Now that Collide is part of 1Password, it's only going to get better. Check it out, K-O-L-I-D-E, collide.com/WW. Go to the website, learn more. You can watch the demo, K-O-L-I-D-E.com/WW, Collide. Really great solution. We thank Collide for supporting Windows Weekly. Now, Paul, pretend that little orange roadblock isn't in your way and continue on. Talking about AI.
I don't feel complete.
I'm going to put a roadblock in post hoc. It's okay. A post hoc roadblock.
Post hoc roadblock. I like it. That's Microsoft's strategy right with OneDrive. So, like I said, we don't have this article up yet, but Bloomberg is reporting that the European Commission has looked into Microsoft's unusual partnership with OpenAI and has determined that it does not warrant a formal probe. Because Microsoft doesn't actually have control over the direction of OpenAI, and it is for all of its unusualness. Like we said when this came up originally, I think the EU, the UK CMA, and maybe the US government have all said that we need to look at this. And yes, this is the role of these regulatory bodies. It's fair to say
they didn't go further. Like, it's perfectly reasonable to come down and say, okay, they don't have control over it, but. This is like we're just walking away. They barely got started.
Yeah. Well, OpenAI is free to partner with other companies. They meet certain milestones. They could walk away from Microsoft forever.
Sure. And Microsoft has partnered with a bunch of other companies.
Yes. Those feel strategic, right, in some ways.
I do think one would argue somewhere in Brad Smith's org, this fact that they've walked away from this is like, did it, right? We positioned ourselves sufficiently to have them leave.
And that's smart just for the company, but it's also smart for appearances with regards to regulators and so forth. So I don't really have much of an opinion on whether this, I feel like the EU, the European Commission is responsible and typically does the right thing. If that makes sense with regards to what they choose to fight, not fight. I mean, it's also a top heavy bureaucracy where everything takes a million years to have anything happen, but. Good. Okay. Anyway, that's fine. We're going to talk about the Steven Sinofsky book, Hardcore Software, at the end of the show. I should have taken notes the first time I read it. I've reread parts of it several times, oddly. Just to deal with my own form of PTSD, I actually read the book in reverse order, meaning I started at the end of it and went backward in time.
Do not read the chapters backwards. Be reading the chapter.
Sections. I would say. Yeah. So if the final section, which deals with Windows 8, has whatever 4 or 5 chapters, I read those in order and then read the previous section.
Went back. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, a lot came out of this, but of course, and like I said, I should have taken notes. I feel like I'm gonna have a series of articles that come out of this aside from the review. But of course, he brings up these things that all of us remember well and have our own perspectives on. And one of them was this notion of embrace and extend, which is contorted into other things.
Extend, extinguish. Yeah.
Yes. And there's a whole history there. This phrase, I think, is completely misunderstood out in the broader world, but including by me back in the day, like everyone else, because you're just a victim of the information you have. But it occurred to me that, so the formalization of this, the thing that made this eventually come out in like a public kind of a way was the antitrust trial that Microsoft had in the U.S. government. So all these internal documents came out. Everyone's freaking out. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. They're talking about cutting off life supplies. It's a terrible company. And it's like, no, it's just a company. They just compete. Yeah. That's how people talk. Yeah. And we got a little too caught up in that stuff. The interesting thing is, I don't think anyone's ever said this, but Bill Gates used to use the phrase internally, embrace and extend, all the time. And so when Jay Allard, the guy who wrote Windows should be the killer app of the internet, wrote that memo, right. He used the phrase, he played off that knowing it would get his attention because he was trying to get this guy to wake up and actually embrace the internet.
Right.
And he called it embrace, extend, and innovate. And if you read this memo, if you read especially the parts that deal with this, it's not malicious. It really is talking about working
Silverberg,
with
right? That's how far back
Jay, this is Jay Allard.
Jay Allard, okay.
It makes sense. It's pragmatic. It's not really nefarious. No. And whatever they did. I mean, Microsoft did some horrible things. I'm not downplaying that.
Yeah,
But in reading this, I thought to myself, this sounds familiar. And it sounds a little bit like, none of these comparisons are ever perfect. It's not like lining up DNA when you're like a CSI guy, but it sounds a little bit like the AI inside, AI outside, AI, whatever the third one is, strategy. Beside inside outside. Yeah. Yeah. That Stevie Batiste talked about last year. Now, the big difference is that the Jay Allard memo, embrace, extend, innovate, was literally a three phase in step, step one first, step two next, step three. And then we arrive at our end goal. But whereas the Stevie Batiste Microsoft thing today is, these things are going to overlap, and they do. We already have those examples. Yeah. We have literal Copilot UI next to Microsoft Word, next to Windows, whatever it might be. And we have the AI inside apps like Clipchamp and Designer we just talked about, right? So we're getting there. And I might see the hint of the beginning of that third app structure in these announcements they're making about Photos and Designer, which seem innocuous on the surface because they are. But could lead to that, or that this, what he's talking about is AI as an orchestrator taking over the role of what Windows today is, or an OS.
Right.
So kind of fascinated by that, and the similarities may be due to the fact that this is how the big software company gets from one place to another. I mean, this may be the way it always is. Maybe sometimes there's four steps or two, or maybe, whatever, but I thought that was kind of interesting, and it may, in the same way that I see the tiger in the grass, it may put it in some sense of historical perspective or not. But I thought I was fascinated by the parallel, so I threw it out there.
Nice.
All right.
Okay. But it's also like less and less AI apps, more and more every app has AI in it.
Yeah, but and if this thing works the way Stevie described it, we may see, and maybe this ultimately may be the next wave. This notion that the very idea of an app changes, Microsoft has tried and they just didn't have the technology at the time, but they've tried a lot of times in the past. Document centric UI in Windows 95, the Microsoft Bob stuff, the Windows Phone stuff with the hubs and everything, like stop thinking about apps. It's like, we play whack-a-mole, when you pick up your phone, you're like, all right, I want to share a photo. And that means I use the Instagram app and I got to muscle memory, the icon, wherever it is and whatever it looks like. And that's how I do things. And, these things were all like, no, you're a human being and you're trying to share a photo. Like,
yeah,
it's a photo hub in Windows. That was how they, think of things. And maybe this breaks down the capability. Maybe I'm not saying this is going to happen, but the idea here is that these standalone apps, as we think of them today, become honestly the way that Unix command line apps were, the way that PowerShell app or commandlets work, where you kind of chain them together and orchestrate a bunch of discrete task solving apps, for lack of a better term, into a concerted, orchestrated final thing that solves your problem, right? I don't have the words because we don't really have these UIs today.
No, but, and again, we thought Windows would be the hub of this, but it might be through other apps.
Yep.
I mean, part of this is the politics inside of Microsoft. Who's got the clout? Who's got the skill set? Who can get to customers quickest? Right. I think
that's why I kept thinking. What impact does this have on those things that mean a lot to us today because they make lots of money, right? It's the reason Apple views everything through the lens of iPhone hardware. know, Microsoft today looks at the world and says, well, I mean, people are subscribing to Microsoft 365, or companies are.
If this sells them 365, if we do this, it's good.
Yeah. It's okay to cannibalize Word and Excel if all we do is provide more benefit to the people who already subscribe, and we get more subscribers, right? You have to be able to make that kind of a mental calculation.
I mean, and M365 also has the graph. So there was a product they couldn't otherwise use that Copilot could surface in a meaningful way.
Yep.
But I also think it's got the energy. People are used to getting new features constantly in the space. They want a bunch of these things. Like, where the Windows folks, I mean, what's been before the LLM wave showed up a year and a half ago? What was the primary message coming from Windows?
You know,
just stabilize it. Like, make it reliable.
I've given this example on the show before. I don't remember, Richard, if it was since you've been here, but years ago, when it was Microsoft Office, and it would come out every 3 years and it would be a different version and it would have all new capabilities. Sometimes it would be new apps, right? So whatever year this was, a million years ago, I'm out in Vegas for some office launch, something. And they do this demo on stage that involves all of the 11 or whatever it was office apps at the time, in a completely fanciful, ridiculous example where this one human being had to create a document, a Word, crunch numbers in Excel, publish something to what was probably like a newsletter or a flyer and publisher. Yeah. They used like a circuit every single component. Stupid, like ridiculous. It was patently ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But today you could make the argument that that software moves to a place where it's like what we have now. You're prompting it. You say, I need to do this. And it says, okay, we'll use the capabilities from the apps that we know exist and the, you know, whatever it does. You don't have to worry about it as the user.
They're already warm. Yeah.
And here's this thing. And honestly, that's not so fanciful. We kind of, you could see it, right? I mean, we're kind of getting there. So interesting.
I know. It's interesting times, no matter though.
Yep.
And the investments continue.
Yes, just not inhumane, hopefully. I kind of want to almost like speed date some of this stuff because there's a lot of AI stuff here. But,
and they have a common theme, right? It's just here and also here and also here and also here.
I left stuff out. You know, I mean,
this is the abbreviated list.
Surprisingly curated list of stuff, but it's kind of weird. So the CEO, I think they call her, of the UK CMA was actually in Washington, D.C., not to speak to the U.S. government, but to speak to at like kind of a trade organization show. And she made a pretty compelling case for big, you know, governments regulating AI and preventing the type of abuses that these companies have already made or done or whatever, from just, you know, extending their and expanding on their dominance, et cetera, et cetera. So the only thing I have to say here is, like, to me, it sounds fairly obvious that regulators need to look at AI and maybe move quickly for a change. And then just from the perspective of the UK CMA, I mean, objectively, I looked at their arguments about Microsoft Activision and found them to be ridiculous. I mean, like just unbelievably stupid.
And also petulant, like they'd already lost and then they went back.
It didn't seem professional. That's another old wound. I don't want to get back on it, but it was horrible and I hated it and I didn't understand it. And it just didn't, I have an open enough mind. If you provided me with the data and the facts and the logic, I'm like, yeah, okay, I can see that point of view. And that one, I just couldn't see it. This one is like, we'll see what comes out of this, if anything. Yeah. But of course, regulators should be looking at this stuff, right? So I'll just leave it at that. In other controversies, there was a company Notion. When I click on things in Notion, they do not launch the articles. So there is an AI company in the United Arab Emirates. Which I'll try to bring up if I can
figure out
how a computer works, called G42, named after the 42 thing from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which honestly is the only frivolous thing about this company. They were doing a lot of work with Chinese companies that Microsoft said violated their sanctions against Huawei and other Chinese companies. And they did a little a deal with Microsoft that was approved by the UAE government as well as the US government, which was, we're going to stop pretending that China is a thing, and we're only going to work with the U.S. companies, including Microsoft, who we are now starting a major partnership with, and we're going to bring Azure to the Middle East, and it's good for Microsoft, good for them, and we'll see. Yeah. It's like really controversial, obviously. All right, I'm sorry.
No, I think it's an excellent question. It's like, are they actually going to get there in a way that's better for everybody?
Yeah, 1.5 billion is a lot of money too. I mean, that's not the same.
The Microsoft announcement does not mention China or anything like that even once, but that was a big part of it.
There. Yeah.
Oh, it was a big part of the story. It's the Microsoft just, I think, was just trying not to, you know, kick that hornet's nest, but it is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Big part. So very interesting. I'm going to speed around some of this stuff. Because, you know, whatever, of course they are. Adobe is working to bring generative AI capabilities to Premiere and et cetera, et cetera. Of course they are. All right. I think, is it, what's the video editor? I think, is it DaVinci Resolve is the video editor I mentioned I saw?
That's Blackmagic.
I think that's DaVinci. The one. The thing I saw at the Qualcomm event, which is what you click on an object and it tracks that object while everything's moving around it, is available now.
Okay.
I assume on an Intel, whatever computer it's using, the GPU, et cetera, but this is one of those things.
We don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't either. That software is so complicated. It makes me feel like an idiot. So I tried it and I'm like, I can't stop using this. Brave has had a flurry of AI announcements over the past few months. Most notably around this Leo in browser AI, which they brought first to the desktop and then to Android and then to iOS and iPad. And then I don't know if we talked about this last week, but they added it to Brave Talk, which is their, by the way, completely free and limitless private video chat service, like a Zoom type thing, but free, you know? So interesting. And then since then, they announced just today, I believe, a feature called Answer with AI that is added now to Brave Search for free. So Brave Search is free. There may be a paid version of this. It will build on whatever they have now for free. But if you've used Google Search in recent days, you know that depending on the query, you could get a little AI block up at the top. You can see it kind of rendering and it will try to use AI to answer your question and then provide traditional links below. And this is basically the Brave version of this, but it's, you know, private, right? It's not, you know, it's not tracking you around the internet. So, you know, anyone can use Brave Search. You don't have to use the Brave browser. It's just search.brave.com. So interesting.
Cool.
I got a cute little email from Google One, which is a subscription service I pay for primarily for the 2 terabytes of online storage I get. But there are other perks. And I had a hard time seeing the benefit to this one, but they sent me a cute little email where a lot of good stuff was happening. Including Google Photo AI editing tools, which were previously a perk of the service, will now be free for everyone. So that's fun for me because I pay for it. They took away the VPN, which I didn't care about because I've used it once and it was terrible. They are taking away, but what's the other one? I can't remember. They're taking away a third feature. And there you go. So enjoy the value from your Google One subscription. I'm like, so is the price going down?
It's declining rapidly.
Yeah. So anyway, the good news for everyone out in the world is that the Google Photo AI editing tools like Magic Eraser are actually pretty great. Like, I would say in the scheme of these things, pretty good, pretty bueno, as we say. So that's something, you know, if you use Google Photos, and you probably should, frankly, check it out because that stuff works really great for the most part.
Oh, yeah. They're discontinuing free shipping for select print orders from Google Photos.
Yeah, that's why I didn't remember, because who cares? Who ships anything from Google Photos? That's right. They do photo frames or photo, you know, books and calendars and stuff. So thank you.
Not to do a huge callback, but, you know, Leo was talking about memory care earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. And I have a family member who's recently put it into care. And one of the things we've been doing is taking pictures with her every time we're there. Huge. And then getting them on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that she sees photos of all of us. She sees photos of all of us there.
Yes.
Oh, because that's interesting.
She has a tough time remembering that we visited her.
Right.
Yeah. So nice.
Filling the walls with those physical pictures really makes a difference for her.
I do both. In fact, I came over with photo albums. This time I came over with I think it's a 19-inch frame. It's like a
big
computer screen. Yeah, from NixPlay. And it's digital. It has 2,000 photos in it. All the old family slides, all the history.
Yeah.
Right. Which she remembers in extraordinary detail.
I haven't done too much of this, but it's a very similar experience. Sorry, the stepmother that we bought the house from and then are living in her condo is suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's and all that stuff. And conversations with her are very difficult. I have all these old photos that my father supplied to me, but I want to, I kind of said, I want to talk to her because she's in these, I'm in these photos as a baby. She's in them. Where was this? When was this? That kind of thing. And I'm thinking, she's not going to know any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And my wife said, you know what? You got to try it. And I just tried a few. And she was like, oh yeah, that was, and she rattled off a couple of them. And I was like, oh, I got to get going on this.
Right. Get them while you can.
There's some interesting breakthroughs you can make.
Yeah.
With that kind of visual prompt, right?
I think we stopped taking pictures with them. And that makes these later times even more confusing. So to take pictures today and in that setting.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah, we can. This Knicks play, by the way, is fantastic.
Yeah.
You can email pictures to it as well and videos.
Nice.
Although
I think I might move to just a standalone digital photo frame like that. I'm using like a Google.
This thing is great.
What do you call it? Like a hub thing. And it's like, I don't use anything else.
Amazon Echo, and you can set up the Echo if you really tweak it. Yeah. They want to put ads in there to just be pictures with a few extra little things.
Okay.
So
that's
what
I want. I just want photos.
She has that in the sitting room and she loves that. She's had that for a couple of years.
Yep.
But I just brought this big photo thing for her bedroom. And honestly, you're right. Absolutely right, Richard. Photos are fantastic. They enliven her.
Yeah. Well, for myself, like when there were photos of an event, I remember it better.
I have photo frames everywhere in the house. Yeah.
It just triggers
it's wonderful. Just,
Yeah. Granted, I'm suffering from my own form of whatever brain problems, but it's,
When you get to one of these places, you realize we're all on the same path. Yeah.
I know. Amazon, like Spotify, has added an AI playlist generator to Amazon Music in this case. The differentiator here is that it will work on all the tiers, free and paid. So that's kind of cool. It's only in beta. It's only in the US right now. It's sporadic. They're kind of rolling it out. I don't see it. I don't pay for it, but I loaded the app to see if I had it. I don't. So you may or may not see it. I just bought an M3 Mac. So obviously they're announcing the M4 Max.
You got a while. I was worried too when I read these news stories.
I'm not worried, but it's end of the year.
It's got a while.
It just means they've laid the dies down and they're going to start doing production.
Yeah,
taping them out.
And obviously, they've expanded the NPU parts dramatically.
That's exactly right. In keeping with the way the world's going, right? I think it was back in February when they did their earnings announcement. Apple's revenues, as I recall, were like flat or even down a little bit. And so it was like, hey, we're going to talk about AI, Don't look over here. Look over here. WWDC is going to be all AI. Mark Gurman has leaked that it's going to be local AI almost exclusively with the first round of stuff. I think that itself is fascinating. We'll have to talk about that when it happens.
That's very Apple, of course, right?
Very Apple. But, and strategically maybe smart. This is how they can do their little privacy game. So anyway, no surprise, obviously, M1, M2, M3. I wonder if they're working on anything new. Oh, yeah. Is it going to be called the M4? Oh, yes, it is. Okay. It's all, whatever. Yeah.
The AI focus is interesting. We talked a lot about this yesterday on Mac Break Weekly because Apple is so far behind in AI.
But ahead on the chipset. Right?
Yeah, they've got the hardware.
And so we're just about to talk about Amazon, but in the same way that Amazon, we said earlier, is kind of approaching it from a unique angle. Mm-hmm. I think Apple, we'll see, but there is the potential that Apple will do the same, where they'll kind of cherry pick from the best of whatever LLMs they partner with and provide those capabilities to their customers. And I think it's Apple. So it's like a bespoke on-device AI service of whatever kind, right?
It's not hard to imagine, right?
Yeah. So we'll see what that, we'll see what form that takes. And then with regards to Amazon and Anthropic Cloud has emerged as one of the big LLM choices. They have a family of these things, different levels, different capabilities, different speeds, different size, different performance, etc. All three are now available on Amazon Bedrock. This is the, I think, the only place you can get these in stable, I guess is the way to say it. But they also, they're partnering with basically everybody who isn't Microsoft or OpenAI. Or Google, I guess.
They're all racing, and weirdly, because Microsoft's ahead, and it's good to see the positioning and being smart about it too, right? Like, I think Apple's making the right play for Apple. I'm not as convinced of the Amazon offering. I think they're still feeling around for their intent here.
Yeah, I think Apple and Amazon both, because of the way they've, you know, they're coming to market. It, you know, they're behind. What are you waiting on? Yeah. But again, they're just kind of doing their own thing. It's interesting. And then finally, I don't know as much about the AMD kind of AI accelerated processor families that I know it has expanded dramatically. Just this week, they announced at least a new family of these Ryzen Pros 8000 series chips for desktop and mobile that have, you know, their MPU built in, right? So this is AMD's take on the AI PC thing. So I will say, the problem is you don't see it as much. And there are examples of this, but it's very rare where you have the same computer, but with an AMD or an Intel option, right?
So, yeah.
You know, comparing
that was more prevalent a while ago, but they're differentiating more now.
It's less common now, but I'd love to be able to compare these things side by side. The only thing I do know is that AMD has come out and said, yes, by the end of the year, we will be in that same range where Intel will be and where Qualcomm will be as far as the TOPS performance of the MPU. So,
I mean, once AMD exists because the U.S. government decided that Intel couldn't be a monopoly and needed to share the chip design so there could be an alternate supplier. And from there, they have diverged. They've each done their own ways of making a better processors, still working the same chipset. AMD got 64-bit ahead of Intel after Intel.
Which drove Intel mad. Yeah. And within, you know, Microsoft basically went to them and said, no, you're doing this. It's called AMD 64. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And they forced it on Intel, you know.
Yeah, that was Windows on Windows.
Yep. Exactly. And it was Dave Cutler. This is it.
When the Cutler speaks.
Yep, you're doing it. And that made them crazy. But, you know, AMD started off as like a low-cost alternative, and they were, you know, kind of cheaper, not quite as good. But these days, I mean, obviously, for a long time, I mean, they've been very competitive. My experiences with AMD Ryzen-based PCs is very good, actually, I would say, overall. So,
cool.
Definitely will pay attention to that stuff. That's it for AI. Look, it was like 21 items.
What a speed round. It was amazing.
Yeah. He was rocking it.
You're a rocker. Let me do a quick break, and then we'll get to the Xbox segment. We still have brown liquor to come. Maybe something Romanian. I don't know. call me crazy.
I just got here.
All right, good. I'm kind of relieved, actually. our show today brought to you by Melissa, the data quality experts. Did you know? Melissa's global address verification and validation service verifies addresses for 240 plus countries and territories. I didn't even know there were that many. By doing this, Melissa helps your business improve deliverability, reduce costly errors, boost your address data accuracy, increase delivery speed. Bottom line, boost your ROI. Melissa also offers free trials and sample codes and flexible pricing. Makes it very easy to get into Melissa, and you will be glad you did. Oh, and don't worry, your data is safe at Melissa. They've achieved the highest level of security status by gaining FedRAMP authorization. Now, of course, that's mostly significant for governmental agencies, but we all benefit, right? We all get the superior level of security. And as I've said many times before, Melissa's solutions and services are also GDPR, CCPA compliant. They meet SOC 2 and HIPAA high trust standards for information security management. Your data is precious to you. Well, good news is precious to Melissa, too. And if you want to try for absolutely nothing, if you want to try this for free, try the Melissa Lookups app. They're on Google Play or on the App Store. Just search for Melissa Lookups. You don't have to sign up even, and you can use them to validate addresses and personal identities in the U.S. or Canada. This is really useful, too. This is what I use it for. You could check global phone numbers and global IP address information. Well, then there's a lot more, too. It's a really cool little app to have. Get started today. That's not the main business. The main thing is the cleaning your customer data. So get started today. 1,000 records cleaned for free. Set it up right now. They've got an API. They've got on-prem. They've got SaaS. They've got any form of you want at melissa.com/ Twit. That's Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, Melissa.com/twit. We thank Melissa so much for making Windows Weekly possible. Thank you, Melissa. Now, let's talk Xbox.
Bring forth the angry Paul.
Oh, no, another rant?
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
Okay. It's the middle of April as we record this.
Mm-hmm. Deal went through in October.
Microsoft acquired Activision Blizzard in October. They said within a month of that, we're not going to have anything for you on Xbox Game Pass, et cetera, by the end of the year. Stay tuned. They waited until February to say anything, and even then admitted they only came out early because there were leaks and they were going to actually do that in March. And then they announced it and said, the first game is going to be Diablo 4. Yay, it's going to happen at the end of, I think, March. Awesome. That is literally the only Activision Blizzard game that has ever appeared on Xbox. I'm paying $15 a month for this thing. What are you doing? So there's a new, every 2 weeks is a new announcement. And it's like, what are these things?
They want to cash in. They got to put out the Fallout series with the Fallout TV show on. Now's the time to make
some
money.
What are you doing? And that's Obsidian, which is not, they might actually be on there. I think that's not Activision Blizzard, is it?
Yeah, Fallout is Bethesda.
That game has got me, that TV show rather has got me really wanting
totally to play the game again. Yeah. It's so good.
It's so cool.
I have friends who are really just love movies and love comic book movies, and I feel like they're not very discerning, right? And one of the things they always say to me is, this one's just a good movie. It's not a comic book movie. It's just a good movie.
All terrible.
And then you watch it, you're like, there's a guy flying around in a cape.
It's
a comic book movie.
I have the same reaction, Paul.
Yep. And I feel like video game movies, which are not as common, obviously, we talked about this, right? Like Half-Life, Half-Life 2 especially. How is that not a Netflix limited series or whatever? Like these things would make
It got optioned badly back when you couldn't make a good video game.
Yeah, so I have not watched Fallout yet. I tend to wait until first of all, it's on Amazon and ads and goddamn them. But
I got my $2.99 a month.
I'm going to see if I can just binge the whole thing when it's done. But this has got the vibe where people I actually trust are saying, this is, forget the how it came about, this is just a great
it's
show.
Really good.
Yeah.
And Lisa had never played the games.
And now she
loves it more than I do.
Yep.
Because it's got the thing that made the game fun, which is that quirky retro futuristic. 50s,
yeah.
It's hysterical. And
because there are multiple games, it all take place in different places and times. Mm-hmm. Franchise, you could do multiple seasons now and move it on to the Las Vegas or the Atlantic City version, whatever, 76 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So good. I'm so glad something.
And this isn't the plot of the game, by the way. Every once in a while, though, something weird happens where you go, like, you need to find the doctor and get the shot within 3 hours. It's like, okay, that's from a game, obviously. Sure. But it isn't the plot, as far as I can tell, of any of the games.
Or you like, guy picks up a key and it doesn't open that door. And he's like, I guess you have to find the key. We're playing a game. Yeah.
It isn't, but it's got so many of the elements and some of the quirky, funny style elements of it. It's wonderful.
There's a whole look and feel vibe to the Fallout series. I think it's beautiful. And they've very clearly done a wonderful job of putting that on the screen. So this is good to me because it means those other things I care about, like the Half-Lives and whatever, could now happen. Like, could make sense. You know, and meanwhile, over here in Microsoft, this is
Halo. We got Halo. It's like,
sorry, you got to take off his helmet. I'm just curious. Do you think that was a core part of the game or the exact opposite of a core part of the game? I'm just curious.
Halo, show.
What are you doing? We wanted to reimagine. Don't use that word. No.
No reimagining.
There's a whole rich universe.
Got no imagination.
Star Wars level history. Just tell the story.
Please, I beg of you.
Yep. You saw Battlestar Galactica. Do that. You know?
I wish that would come back. I would love to see that.
By the way, I think it's going to. I think there's another remake coming, by the way.
Won't be as good. Won't be as good.
I don't see how it could be.
No. It was perfect.
This is how you know that one's good. I haven't done this, but I feel like I could get my wife to watch it. She would resist because she ships. And I'd say, give it a second. And then she would get into the whole mythology bit of it and the who is the Cylons and who isn't. And
But it was profound about Ronald Moore's Battlestar Galactica is that people had breakdowns. Like that.
Yes.
When they
ran, it was gritty and realistic. Yeah.
Nothing got fixed. The argument is that Moore was working on Star Trek Voyager, and he wanted to do the same thing for Voyager, and the other writers wouldn't let him, and he left. Well, and he went also, and did it with he went and did it for
Avery Brooks Star Trek series, the Deep Space Nine, I think. Is that the one? That was supposed to be gritty. Like we're going to make this more, and it wasn't. It was Star Trek gritty. Like it's just, the cleanness of the future is.
And then they tried again with Voyager, and the same thing. And then the guy with that broad story mind.
Yeah, I thought they nailed it. You know, I mean, obviously the special effects are dated. I don't know why we're talking about Battlestar. I'm sorry. I love that show. I recommend it highly. The whole run. Okay. I don't even know what I was talking about. Okay, so a couple of months. Oh, as part of this same announcement that they, you know, Diablo 4 is coming to Game Pass. To Game Pass. They also announced, and these were the leaks that got them to announce this stuff early, that yes, four of our games across our studios are going to come cross-platform to PlayStation and Nintendo Switch. And we have now, as of today, yesterday, have had three of those releases. So yesterday released Grounded on Switch, PlayStation 4, and 5. A new fully yoked update. This is one of those Honey, I Shrunk the Kid things where you go down, you shrink down to the size of an ant, you're in the backyard, now everything's really dangerous. So it's kind of fun, right?
That sounds like fun. Yeah,
I think so. Cross-platform, fun. I don't know that we covered this explicitly, but Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush were two of the others. They both shipped cross-platform in February, March, depending on the game. I think Hi-Fi Rush is PlayStation 5 only, and the other one is all three. PS4, PS5, and Switch. Pentiment is, that is. And then the fourth of the games, which is Sea of Thieves. Is it Sea of Thieves? I think it's, Sea of Thieves, is launching on PlayStation 4 and 5 at the end of the month on April 30th. And we haven't written this up either because it just happened, but they announced today that over the course of the game, Sea of Thieves has had 40 million users. Now, that doesn't mean there's 40 million people sitting there playing Sea of Thieves, right? It's, you know, cumulatively, I guess, 40 million different players across Xbox, Windows 10, and Steam. Windows 10 meaning the Microsoft Store, like the Xbox app on Windows, I guess. Cool, right? So this is a game of those, like, kind of under-the-radar type games that has achieved kind of a nice long life. And it's a good example of Microsoft. They don't always do it, but they... Some games, they just throw their support behind it and they keep releasing updates and doing things with it. It's fun. And now we're going to get it on PlayStation and that might expand the audience even further. So that's cool. So 40 million players is nothing to sneeze at.
It's great.
I have never really even played it. You know, I'm embarrassed to say. And I only mentioned this one because it's kind of fun. So Epic Games, of course, is these two antitrust cases going against Google and Apple. They've done terribly against Apple. They've done really well against Google. And they have submitted a petition to the court to force Google to open up Android and the Play Store further than Google wants to. And the way they did it was by writing what I will call fan fiction. And what I mean is they submitted a filing as if it were the judge issuing an order. And look, if you agree with it, I'm not saying do it, but you could just put your name on it. We did your homework for you. And they wrote it as if it was an order from the judge, which I found to be incredibly funny. I don't know if that's common. I've never personally heard of anything like that.
It might really piss off the judge, honestly.
I do think there was, maybe they asked. I don't know. I don't know how this came about, but I was reading it and it was like, wait, this is from the judge. What is this? I thought that Epic was, and it took me a while. And then I said, wait a minute. This is their idea of what the order might look like. It's like, we just won in court. We have some idea about the damages phase. I don't know if you're interested. So Epic is ballsy, I think is the term I would use.
Yeah, going for it is what they're doing.
So good for them. I only mentioned it because I'm like, what is this? It's like, is that what this is?
Are you really going to go for that?
Okay. I guess we
see how the judge like does. Right?
All along, they've been kind of like this, kind of jerky. I feel like it's funny. Not going to land well, but who knows?
But they're the little guy fighting the big guy, and that goes a certain distance. But
not that little.
Come on, Google. They're a they're a gnat.
Compared to Google and Apple, I mean, they are God. Yeah. They are the Fortnite gods, but they are lesser gods compared to the Apple god.
Yeah. Look, they may be a big deal in North Carolina, but I don't know you don't know what it's like here in California. I don't know. Yeah, they're a big deal. I mean, they're a big deal in the gaming world for sure. I mean, obviously, yeah. But I just thought it was funny. I don't know. Good for them.
Your Honor, I don't know if you know, but we're kind of a big deal in our neck.
We have our own lawyers. I mean, we can throw something together.
Why should you do any extra work?
Oh, look on here. It is. It's 40 pages. I don't know. Maybe. I just tell us what you think.
Try it on for size.
Give it a grade.
It looks good on you.
You know, it's funny. It's just funny to me. Maybe someone who is a legal expert or a lawyer could be like, oh, no, this happens all the time.
But I that's a good question.
To me, I thought this felt unique. I thought it was kind of funny.
We had Denise Howell on Sunday. I should have asked her then, but I didn't know about it, so I didn't.
It might have happened since then. It might have been earlier this week, yeah.
All right, Mr. T, hold on for a second. Your tip of the week coming up, your app pick of the week. We've got a Runners Radio pick, and yes, a brown liquor pick that kind of shocks me.
Mm.
Kind of surprises me.
Wow.
Is it it's gin?
No. It's traditional. It's a kind of traditional. Well, we'll see.
Back to basics here, I think.
I don't know what Rich is thinking.
I'll tell you when it's my time.
Okay. This is exciting. I just want to put in a little plug before we get to the back of the book for the club, because you club members have been so great. We are so grateful to our club members. But also, we know that club members are less than 2% of the audience. And honestly, you know, if you don't like us, you could just say, I don't like you.
Is it me? Did we do this?
Because if we want to keep going as a podcast network, we're going to need to get more than 2% of you to join the club. I mean, that's just the fact of it. It is a vote. You know, you're letting us know you're voting with your dollars. $7 a month. We try to give you some good benefits. I think we do. You get ad-free versions of the shows. We don't need to show you ads. We don't need to track you. You also get video of all the shows. For instance, one of the things we did, this was Lisa's idea, it was a great idea, is to take some of the shows like Hands on Windows that Paul does, or Hands on Mac with Micah, or the Untitled Linux show, or the Home Theater Geek show, or iOS Today. Shows that we were keeping behind the paywall. We've now made them available to everybody. But we did a little sneaky little thing. We made them available to everybody in audio. If you want the video, you can join the club. Okay? So everybody gets to listen. And those are ad-supported, those audio versions. So if you want to hear what Paul's talking about on Hands on Windows, now you can. But the video is behind the club paywall. We also have the Discord, which is a great hang for all the people who love to get in there and talk about geeky subjects. And by the way, not just the shows, every subject under the sun. We also have additional stuff like Stacy's Book Club is coming up tomorrow and stuff like that. We've got a little party event. We're going to do a watch party from the LaPorte House next month. That should be a lot of fun. All of that for $7 a month. But more importantly, that $7 a month is your way of saying, yeah, we want to hear more. We want you to keep doing what you're doing. You probably are aware of this. Advertising, it's kind of interesting because I just read a stat that said more ads have moved to digital audio this year. That it's now the spend is like $7 billion. I think it's all going to Joe Rogan. I got to be honest. It ain't going to us. I don't know who's making all that money, but it ain't us. And all the podcasters I talk to, especially the tech podcasters, are saying it's really tough out there. Mm-hmm. Frankly, the ad dollars are dwindling. We have had to cut back. We will have to cut back more. Honestly, we're not Humane Pin. We don't have hundreds of millions of dollars in venture capital. It's just me and Lisa. So if the expenses go above the revenue, then we have to cut stuff out. If it goes far enough, we might have to end the whole thing. And a lot of podcasts have gone out of business. A lot of podcast networks have gone out of business. We don't have a side hustle. We don't have conferences. We don't have books that we're selling. What we're doing is this. So if you like what we're doing and you want to keep it on the air and you want to keep hearing the shows and you want us to grow, please join the club. twit.tv/clubtwit. I would really appreciate it. I know everybody at Twit would really appreciate it. It's how you vote for what we're doing.
And frankly, these days we need your votes. All right, enough said. Thank you very much for your kind attention. On we go with the show, and Paul Thurrott, let's do the back of the book. Your tip of the week, sir.
Yeah, just real quick, though, I pasted this into the notes. Somebody tweeted this to me. Apparently, Microsoft is now displaying, and this is going to be shocking, an ad in Windows 11.
That's a big ad.
Yep. If you're using Chrome, they'll be like, you know what? You can use Chrome, but how about putting Bing into it as your default search engine, and you could use ChatGPT.
Oh, for free.
Yep.
That's a good price.
Your soul for free. It's not really free, right? They're kind of following you around the internet here. I don't know.
Wow, anyway, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
That's a big ad. I will say that looks like it's about three times as big as a standard banner notification ad in Windows. So,
wow.
Good for them using that real estate, you know. It's not going to sell itself. That's all I'm saying. Okay. This one's going to shock some people, but I have finally gotten through Hardcore Software. This is the book by Steven Sinofsky, the former head of Office and then Windows at Microsoft. He left the company in a bit of controversy in 2012, right as Windows 8 was coming out the door. And I think my... let me say this diplomatically. We've clashed a bit over the years. maybe is the way to put it. And so I avoided this book for about a year. And then I think I might have mentioned this at some point. It kind of came up. I don't know. I was browsing around for a new book and it popped up in Amazon. And I was like, you know what? I got to read this. I got to get through it. I got to get over my PTSD. And I like I said earlier, I read it in reverse. And then I went back and reread big parts of it repeatedly. In fact, in some of them cases, several times. And I'm probably going to write a bunch of articles that will be inspired by some of the things. There's a lot of insight in this book, which I don't mean to say I'm surprised by that, but I disagree with him on some things for sure. I agree with him on more things than I expected. And he came to some of the same conclusions internally at Microsoft as I did externally. Which, you know, obviously I appreciate. We all like to be told we're right, you know. Anyway, if you care about Microsoft and the history there, this, you know, he joined the company in 1989, like I said, left in 2012, ran Office successful, or I should say released at least, I think it was six successful versions of that product, managed the transition of Microsoft from a company that targeted, not all of Microsoft, managed the transition of a product line that originally targeted enthusiasts and then individuals and then small businesses and then finally enterprises in the cloud. And he did what he did with Windows, but historically very important. And I think an interesting parallel to my book, which is Windows Everywhere. And it will inform, I was already going to update that book, but this will inform some of that. It's worth it.
I'm shocked because I really thought you didn't.
Yeah, like I did guy. Too. I did too. I'm disappointed in myself. I will say I have not talked about this privately with Richard, and this is unfair of me to do this here, but I said this to Mary Jo when I saw her in New York a couple of weeks ago. And I'll just say she reacted negatively to this suggestion, but I would suggest it to you as well, Richard, given your inside knowledge of the history of .NET in particular and all the software development stuff over the years. You should read it.
I just put it on my Kindle. I will read it.
It's worth it. I think you'll be fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And this is so much to it. So, and I'm making that recommendation, I think, just generally to everybody. And then a little bit of inside baseball. Last week, I recorded some new episodes of Hands on Windows. And just not that anyone probably ever thinks about this stuff, but that podcast is very different from this show. With this show, we have notes and I kind of use it as a guide for the discussion, but obviously we veer off in whatever directions. And then in Hands on Windows, it's mostly screen grab stuff. Like I capture the screen, I talk about things. So I don't create a script. I don't like to read, dictating or something, but I do make notes. And one of the episodes I recorded, we're going to be doing a bunch of this stuff, of course, is about Copilot. And each time I got to a topic, it occurred to me that I needed to take a step back and define something or explain what something was. And I ended up writing in just note form what amounted to probably 1,000 words of explanatory text, background text that frankly has no place being in hands on Windows, right? Which for its name is hands on. It was too much time. So I just threw up a free video on throughout.com. It's like a 5 minute. It's literally a presentation. I listening to it myself, it sounds like I'm reading it, which I hate, but it's not. It's just based off those notes I had written earlier for hands on Windows. So it's just kind of a backgrounder on a lot of the goofy language and concepts that are unfamiliar that come out of AI and how they apply specifically to Copilot. You know, like we talk about things like GPTs or LLMs or grounding, you know, there's all this language prompts that came up in today. Amazon announced this thing called Maestro, which is their AI based playlist minute service in Amazon Music. They use the word prompt. They say it's a simple, give it a simple prompt. This word has just permeated our lives. Like it's like the language of AI is just out there. So I think for a lot of people, it's confusing and unfamiliar. So I just made it's quick. It's just a little, it's a goof. It's 5 minutes. So I just didn't want to take that time and hands on Windows. Cool. Because, you know, those things tend to be, you know, hands on. Okay. And then a couple of quick app picks to DuckDuckGo, which I think, you know, in this space is one of those companies we can trust, has created a subscription service called Privacy Pro that kind of builds off of the privacy work that they've done in their search engine and their browser and their other services. And there are three pieces to it, kind of like the iPhone. You get in the picture, it's like three things, except the three unexciting things. An anonymous VPN, a personal information removal service that will take your data away from data brokers. And then that nuclear option you hope you never need, the identity theft restoration service, which is your identity has been stolen and they will literally give you a human being that will work with you to restore your stolen accounts, your financial losses if possible, fix your credit report, etc. So I really like DuckDuckGo. I like them a lot. I want so badly to recommend their web browser. It doesn't support extensions. You know, there are these, you can't pin browser tabs. There's all these like basic
Yeah, like you need my password manager. It's not optional.
You gotta nail right. There, I think they use Bitwarden, by the way, at the back end of theirs, if I'm not mistaken. Right. The password manager, I think. But regardless, I love it. I love the idea. I want to use it. I would recommend it. But you gotta have the basics, and
you gotta finish it.
Yeah. So they're not there yet. And then finally, Mozilla, because it's been 4 weeks. If you thought, Game Pass releases were getting predictable and boring. Mozilla releases a new version of their browser, Firefox, every 4 weeks. It's been 4 weeks. I wouldn't describe any of this stuff as major, but a bunch of improvements across codec support, PDF features, Firefox View, which is that little tab button up in the corner, autofill improvements will prompt you, you know, to save your address if they see you submitting it, right? Makes sense, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're on Firefox, you're going to get this, you know, it's a solid update, but just mentioning it. If you didn't see the update, you can just go grab it.
You still using Arc? Is Arc on Windows getting better?
I use Arc on the Mac.
I love Arc on the Mac.
I'm still primarily Brave, but that said, I've been trying other browsers. I've been using Vivaldi a lot lately across platforms as well, like on the Mac, on Windows, and on the iPhone. It's interesting. There's like, you could build a matrix of features across all the, you know, like there are things that like Brave does much better on mobile than Vivaldi. Like they don't have a built-in reader mode that makes any sense, but Brave does and it works great. I don't know. But then again, the Vivaldi is prettier and they do this auto theming thing where you're visiting a site and the browser shell takes on the color theme of the site, which is cool, frankly. So yeah. But anyway, yeah. Arc is, I'm obsessed about Arc. Arc is two browsers. I'm using a markdown editor called IA Writer, which I may have mentioned. I'm sure you're familiar with, Leo. It is the most minimalistic, ridiculous application. I'm in love with it. And my brain is broken because this product and Arc probably don't make sense to anybody. It's not like something I can just kind of recommend, but I love them both. And I can't explain. It's hard to explain. I can explain why, but people just look at me like, yeah, okay. So I'm just going to use Word. Is that okay? Can I just write with a normal application? Like I just don't, this is the way my brain works. I don't know. But yes, I do still use Arc.
Okay. Richard, time to do a little plug for Run As Radio.
Absolutely. So recorded back when I was down in Australia a few weeks back, my friend Damian Brady, who's one of the DevRel folks for GitHub, we got to sit down and talk about GitHub Copilot, the sort of original Copilot, but also we targeted at the sysadmin. So we've been talking about sysadmins using GitHub in general, just starting to treat their scripts like the code that it is. But if you start playing with Copilot as well, you start to be able to improve your scripts a lot, writing parameter testing and better error messages and all those sorts of things that make a higher quality script get way easier with a tool like Copilot. Damian was quick to push us into, hey, you're going to be talking about sensitive stuff about your company, so you really should be using GitHub Copilot for Business because it protects your data better. So you aren't afraid to put your own code up there. One of the fun ones we were talking about was modernizing PowerShell. So a lot of folks write PowerShell, like they're still using PowerShell 2 or 4, and it's PowerShell 7 now. But the reality with Copilot is you can literally show it a PowerShell script that runs and says, can you modernize this? Can you, you know, write it using PowerShell 7 features? And it will rewrite it for you.
It's interesting. I think I just saw stats that some huge number of developers are now
using 55%+ somewhere in that realm. Yep.
It is just a huge success.
This is the most successful maybe not influential, but arguably the most successful AI service in some ways, in the sense of, you know, impacting that particular market that strongly. It's incredible.
It's amazing. Yep. I don't know, and I wonder, maybe you guys know, if the way they're using it is, you know, I saw somebody saying, yeah, I just typed the first three words of my phrase and then it just finishes it, so it speeds up hugely. I wonder if people are using it to paste in code. I've been using AI in my coding problems,
right,
and it is huge. It's transformed my ability. I've gotten so much farther, but I've never paste. I don't paste in code. I query it. It's just as you said. I can't remember the regular expression, for this and the, but it's so helpful. It is literally like having Gandalf over your shoulder, and you say, "Hey, what the hell is? How do you do that?" And he says, "Well, try this." And I never paste it in, but I have to. I wonder, are people pasting in code blocks of code?
You know,
that seems to me a bad idea.
Absolutely,
people are going to use it. I mean, some people write their high school essays. Some people copy. we're gonna get the whole gamut.
But I will say it's incredibly useful, even just as a code advisor.
It just seems like it just seems perfect. It seems like the perfect use for AI, right? If it's such a finite body of information, it is that perfect grounding example that, you know, should always work. It's great.
It's amazing.
Yep.
It's amazing.
I wish I programmed more.
Last year I got to day 16 on the advent of code installed.
I see your post on Mastodon.
Am now up to day 21, and I think I'm going to finish it. And it's really, I credit the little GPT that I wrote. It's made it so much easier. It's really helped me get over a hump in coding. So I'm a fan.
Should we talk about Four Roses?
I think we should.
Brown Licka time.
Yeah.
So I was shocked because I always think of Four Roses as the thing behind the bar that they just have there for the rummies.
There's a good reason for that, Leo.
That's Wild Turkey.
Well, okay. It's a step above Wild Turkey. Maybe.
Four Roses this is part of this. One of the reasons I want to tell the story is because that's exactly what happened to it. Four Roses was an old school bourbon. Started in 1888 by Paul Jones. That was when he got the trademark. Arguably, he was making it 20 years before that, and was originally made as a classic Kentucky straight bourbon. So that's, as we know it, the 51% corn model that's become the standard for American bourbon. And so they made it through the early 1900s and shut down through Prohibition, came back up and running again. But the big change happened in 1943 during World War II. The Seagram's Company, which is out of Ontario, Canada, acquired Four Roses. Now, Seagram's was well known for making Canadian blended whiskeys. And so they started doing the same thing with Four Roses. Now, they had a good contract with the Kirin organization out of Japan. And so they would continue, they continued to make the Kentucky bourbon the way they always had on what they call the black label. They would ship that only to Japan. Kirin was importing it for Japan. And the rest of the whiskey they're making, they were making into various kinds of blends. And from the beginning, Four Roses blends through Seagram's were high-end or A-class blends. So when you're making a blend, what you're really doing is cutting with neutral spirit. It's not just stuff that's aged in a barrel because that's expensive. You add a certain amount of neutral spirit to it, although initially they were adding what's known as grain spirit. And grain spirit is you're still using grain, but you're distilling it up high, 80-plus percent. And Seagram's, because they use so many barrels, they would condition barrels by using that grain spirit, put it in the barrel for 3 months, which preps the barrel for other uses. And then they would use that as their blending stock, which makes it still makes a very good whiskey. But as you get into the darker times of whiskey in the late, in the early 70s, early 80s, when whiskey was falling out of favor and they needed, they kept trying to cut the price, this is where Four Roses got that bad reputation. At one point, the standard Four Roses edition was only 20% aged whiskey. The rest was all neutral spirit. So it was kind of known as crap, rot gut.
Yeah.
But
you'd see in a brown paper bag in a gutter somewhere. Yeah.
Because it was cheap.
Yeah.
So, but by 2000, Seagram's actually gets sold in a joint deal between Diageo and Pernod Ricard. It's a complicated story on it. It's all on its own. And in that process, they weren't sure what to do with Four Roses. And Kirin, the company that this entire time has been importing black label Kentucky bourbon called Four Roses, says, we'll buy it. So to this day, it's owned by them. They take it over lock, stock, and barrel. And the first thing they did was get rid of the blends, because they didn't have the blending stock coming from Ontario and all those other places. They just wanted to make the normal stuff. And so within a couple of years, they reintroduced it in the U.S. as straight bourbon again. And their initial product was a yellow label, combined barreling, very normal. But later on, go on to make the small batch and the single barrel. The single barrel won in 2019, won gold in the World Whiskey Award. So it's a top tier whiskey today. Their particular approach is they have a couple of different mash bills. One's called Mash Bill B, which is 60% corn, 35% rye, 5% barley. And Mash Bill E, which is 75% corn, 20% rye, 5% barley. They also use a bunch of different yeast strains, five of them, so that they have essentially 10 different recipes for how they make whiskey. And in fact, recently they were talking about putting out an addition, a special bottling where you could try all 10. They do normal American bourbon distilling process. So they use a column still to raise to 66% from their 8% brewer's yeast. Then they do use a pot still, which they call a doubler, but it's a pot still, up to about 70%. Oddly, they then take all of the distillate, put it into tanker trucks, and ship it to warehouse facilities in Crox Creek in Kentucky, which is a different area, because they have a very specific design of rack house. They use a single-story rack house, storing their barrels in wooden racks horizontally, very traditional. But it's because the temperature problems in Kentucky are substantial. So by keeping their rack houses low, they don't have as much heat variation top to bottom. Of course, they cut with water before they go into the barrel. So typically their distillate is in the 70% range. They cut it to 60% before they barrel it, so they don't pull those harsh flavors out. And they do at least 5 years of aging. They're normally chill filtered. And again, for many years, they were taking the sets of barrels they were getting out, plus some older ones to get their standard yellow label. But these days now, they routinely make an addition that I quite like and I think is worth the price, which is their single barrel. And that's typically coming around 57% alcohol, so fairly high, and about $100, which is a pricey for a bourbon, but this is pretty high caliber bourbon. Your basic yellow label can get down to $40, but if you're going to get something nice, get the single barrel. You'd be very happy with it.
Wow. God, give them another try.
Yeah, they've come around. You just means you've been around long enough, Leo, that you remember the before times.
Yeah, and in a way, I'm surprised they kept with the brand, but I guess,
But you remember, Kirin had been selling this stuff as proper bourbon the entire time in Japan. Wow. In fact, it was kind of legend for us cultists who are into bourbon, trying to get your hands on the black label, the export, because there is like, listen, there is good four roses. You just have to be in Japan to get it. And once in a while, you could get one back because they were all made in Kentucky.
It's like bluefin tuna.
But then they were shipped to Japan.
Right.
It all gets shipped to Japan.
All the good stuff gets shipped to Japan.
So this is one of them. Okay. And I hadn't talked about a straight up bourbon in weeks. The last time I talked about bourbon was Elijah Craig. And I've toured this distillery. I knew this. To go back over again and pull all the details together because it is a redeemed brand
every week.
What do they drink in Romania?
Well, we're in the eastern part of Romania, close to the Moldovan border. This is a great wine country. We're on the eastern slope of the Carpathians, so semi arable desert. The real wine, I had a beautiful cab sav for dinner tonight. But this is Divin country, my friends. They use the cognac process for making brandy here, and it is outstanding. And you never see it in the West. It all goes to Russia.
Oh, you talked about this last time you were out there.
Yeah. Well, and this is why I don't have my suitcases. I packed a big bag. I intend to bring a half a dozen bottles back with me because it's hard to get this stuff. When I get to Warsaw, there's a couple of specialty shops in Warsaw where I can get some, but we're the motherland now. I can get the real good stuff. So
how cool.
I'm not going to go to Moldova to get it because there's kind of a war.
Yeah.
But here in Eastern Romania, we'll be all right.
Every time you recommend a whiskey or a bourbon, I go to that company's website. And almost every time they have a really good section on like cocktails, their kind of takes on cocktails. This one's particularly good. I forwarded it to my wife. I don't always forward these pages to her, but if you care about cocktails, this is a good one. The one from Four Roses and their bourbon forward cocktail, very like Paper Plane, which I only discovered last year. And then they have several takes on like the Manhattan and the Old Fashioned. It's good. This is including one, by the way, called the MMC Old Fashioned that uses mole bitters from Mexico. Bitterman's might not be from Mexico, but the the name is very Mexican for sure. And it's very interesting. I'm gonna try that. Interesting.
You are Richard. I did not know this, but you are in the country that has the fifth fastest internet on the planet.
And not in this hotel.
It is the number one state in the EU when it comes to internet speed.
Yeah. Wow.
Somebody in our Discord sent me an article from last September in Euro Reporter, how Romania built its blazingly fast internet.
It helped not having anyone using it.
No, that's the other thing.
Romania is also the study in depopulation, right? When the wall fell, quarter of their population
left.
They've never really recovered from it.
But the people who stayed, 88% coverage rate. Yeah. They have a very high, they have more internet penetration than France, Belgium, Finland, and Austria.
Wow. And they're big tech centers, and we're not in one right now. But I've spent some time in Timisoara and in Cluj. Like, they're serious tech centers. Those are very bright people, build cool stuff.
It's true in Estonia also. I think it's a really smart way of taking a backward economy that's been suffering under Soviet rule for decades and bringing it into the 21st century and making it a digital economy.
Yeah, so the Estonians very much modernized. You do all your voting online.
Yeah.
They were also attacked by the Russians. Back as a cyber attack, extend the nationwide, small nation,
Before we go, just a quick question for Richard. Do you know Chris Woodruff? Is that name familiar?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Microsoft ecosystem developer, guy on the outside, right? So he's on Mastodon. I see his stuff all the time. And he always posts about developer topics. So he had a post that just said it was a missing dev, a div. Mm-hmm. So I wrote it back and I said, that would make a really good epitaph for your for your tombstone. So he sent me a picture of what that might look like. So it just says Chris Woodworth, whatever years. It was a missing div, which is like, I guess, an HTML, term. No,
it's an HTML joke as opposed to a IT
or a XAML joke, maybe. Or,
it's always DNS. That's the truth.
Yeah. Always. In the end, DNS got him.
Yeah.
It was always DNS. Boys, it's time to call it a day. Sun's gone over the yardarm. Time to pour us
little cocktail for Four Seasons cocktail.
Yeah.
For
the MMSC Manhattan. Old fashioned.
Nice. I'm going to slip upstairs to the rooftop bar because I think I can get in the last call and get myself a brandy.
Go on up there. Get a Four Roses for yourself. Mm. Richard Campbell is at Run As Radio. That's where his shows, Run As Radio and .NET Rocks, live. And he is always a welcome presence on Twit. Thank you for being here, Richard. Paul Thurrott, the founder of this show, Windows Weekly, is at Thurrott.com, T-H-U-R-R-O.
Like you might have been the founder of the show, but
it wasn't a show till you came along.
I joined you, for sure.
I had a fantasy. I had a dream. I said, if we were to make a Windows show, who would I want to host it?
And if that guy's not available, let's go with Thurrott.
No, you were the first and only, I swear to you, first and only choice. Because you were at the time you were doing the Win Supersite, Supersite for Windows. And I thought you were the best guy out there covering Windows. You still are.
I thought so, too. Thank you.
Yeah. Almost 20 years later, still doing it. He's only gotten better looking and better spoken. Paul, his books are at leanpub.com. That's where you can find Windows Everywhere. And the Field Guide to Windows. Somebody's calling me. I thought
Lisa again.
I put my phone on hold. Did you hear that? Did you hear it ringing?
Yeah, I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. Okay. Sorry about that. My phone is the camera. So when it rings, something weird. There's the Windows Everywhere book. A great book. If you want to kind of cover the history of Windows and it's through its programming languages. Of course, the Field Guide to Windows 11 is also a must buy. Together, they became the Windows Weekly Fantastic Duo. And every Wednesday we get together, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, to do Windows Weekly. You can watch it live if you want to get the very first edition of it. The ink is still wet on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. Let the ink dry a little bit, and you can get it on our website, twit.tv/dubdub. There's also a dedicated channel on YouTube to Windows Weekly's video. And, of course, you can subscribe anytime in any podcast player in that way. And, by the way, you can choose audio or video, whatever you prefer. That way you'll get it the minute it is available. We thank all of our subscribers. We thank especially our Club Twit members who make this show and all the shows we do possible. Thank you, Club Twits. We will see you a week from tomorrow with Stacy's book club. Actually, Stacy's coming up on Twig in just a little bit. We got a kind of reunion episode ahead. What else? I guess that's it. Thank you for being here. We will see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.